listening to Lead Off. Lead Off with Ziggy and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You ready to rock?
Tipped ahead, and here's a chance now for Tavares and over the line. Back for Simmons, going to the backhand. Scores! The Maple Leaf Simmons on a backhand off the roof of the net, and they have struck twice in the first minute and 18 seconds. Now going to dish it off for Thornton. Here comes the shot. He scores! I'm not sure if it was tipped. I do not believe so, but Joe Thornton has ended a drought for him. Foligno's got an empty net. Nick Foligno drops it back to Marner, who will score.
And that pretty much sums up Nick Foligno right there. An opportunity to put it into the empty net. Pulls up, feeds it out to Mitch Marner for the easy empty netter.
So I always want to be very careful about discussing too much about what's going on with you, because only I can see you on FaceTime. Like, Silent Vic, Hayden can't, the listener can't. Are you wearing a kimono?
A kimono? I don't even know what that is. A kimono?
Yeah, like, are you wearing...
I've never heard that word
before. Are you wearing a robe?
I'm wearing a robe, yes.
Would you get that out of an expensive hotel?
Of course I did.
You're telling me you don't bathrobe on the show.
Are you telling me you don't take the robes out of the rooms? Is that not allowed?
I don't. I will neither admit nor not.
Or deny. I take the slippers and the robe. Why wouldn't I? Come on. Like, that's kind of, those robes are washed and reused, aren't they not? Like, do you put the robe on in a hotel room?
No. No.
Okay. I put the slippers on. They're new. They're in the plastic bag. But I mean, I don't stay at those hotels anymore. Those are back in the playing days. Yeah. I don't think I've stayed at a hotel with a robe and slippers
You're definitely putting the slippers on because you don't want to know what's in those carpets, right? That's going through your mind.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The slippers go on in the hotel room when you had them available. But no, with the robes. I own a couple robes. They're nothing fancy, but I hadn't worn one in a while. I have a handful of hoodies I put on in the morning. I couldn't find one. And I'm just like, you know what? We're going to go robe today.
No, because you pulled up FaceTime and I noticed, well, he's wearing a t-shirt, but there's a robe over top of the t-shirt. That's an interesting look. I didn't even think of it.
I didn't. Till Silent Vic usually calls me in the morning, make sure I'm up and the gear is all working. And he's like, are you wearing a robe? And I'm like, I didn't even think of it. It was the first thing available. So, you know, Leafs win last night. I'm going to put the robe on maybe from now on. That's the kind of feeling I have today.
The morning after the win robe. I like that. That's not a bad idea.
I'm going to put the robe on after the Leafs win. And then after, if Grichuk hits a home run with the Jays, I put my Jays jersey on. That's it. Those are my two things I have going on right now.
You got to be very careful, though. You start adding a third and a fourth, you're going to have a hard time remembering what to do. And imagine the Leafs win and Randall Grichuk homers the night before.
You're going to have your Grichuk jersey
on underneath your robe.
I will. I'll swap it out. My boy Randall.
Who knows? I mean, maybe the same way that Kramer's low-talking girlfriend was trying to bring the Pirate Puffy shirt back into style, maybe a little robe over a t-shirt. Maybe you're a trendsetter here.
You know who used to wear the robe? There was two players I played with that wore robes in the room. And one of them used to get it personalized. Like, it was a boxing robe. And I don't even know. Is there a difference between a boxing robe and a regular robe? Or,
well, I think out of what it's made out of, right? I don't know what boxing robes are made out of, but typically they got that shine to them, right?
Mike Commodore used to wear... who played in Detroit, Columbus, Carolina, Calgary. He wore a robe in the room and it was just awesome. But he had his name. It was personalized. And then our good friend Keith Tkachuk, he used to wear one in the room. And you know what?
Coming out of the lockout, did it have a 46-inch waist?
Yeah, it was an extra large. It maybe a double XL, but he used to wear one. And by the time I saw that, it was, you know, like my seventh or eighth year, and I'm like, it's actually a good idea. Why didn't I think about getting a robe in the room? And then I'm like going over it. I just didn't fit that personality in the room. Usually it's like the best player or the oldest guy. I'm like, some prospect or suspect is not going to be wearing a robe around with his flip-flops in the room. It's a bad look.
Well, when the Jays got David Price in 2015, he bought every player in the clubhouse a blue or royal blue, Blue Jays colored robe with the last name and their number in the style of the Blue Jays number on the back of their jerseys on the back. And
love it.
Marco Estrada, so Price is here for two and a half months, whatever it was, and then he leaves for Boston as a free agent after the season. I think 2 years later, Marco Estrada was still wandering around the clubhouse with that robe on. Absolutely loved it. But yeah, I think one of the things that stands out for me from that 2015 season, outside of all the wins the Blue Jays had.
I'm telling you, it changes your outlook on the day. You put the robe on, you're a little bit more relaxed. You get a little zenned out. It's like you put the robe on, you want to throw a candle going, you know, you want to get a little incense going. That's kind of what it feels like. You're just in this zen, relaxed, meditative. Yeah, it's kind of nice.
You envision yourself walking out onto your balcony from your bedroom, overlooking the Mediterranean Sea in Italy.
Yes.
You got a cigar, shot of espresso, maybe like a croissant, and it's brekkie on the balcony overlooking the water.
Yeah.
With that robe on.
I'm on Lake Como right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Me and George Clooney.
It's not 4 degrees and freezing in Toronto at the end of April. It's my life in Italy. How wonderful it would be. Nick Foligno, man. I know that's going to be the lead. I thought Jack Campbell was very good last night. We got to talk about John Tavares and this renaissance, if you will, after a tough start to the season. He's kicking it into gear at just the right time. But it doesn't take much. As you said yesterday, you never want to be that guy acquired by a new team that's on an 8 or a 9 game winning streak, because if you hit the ice and the team loses, everybody's looking around going, what's different today than the other day? But when you come in on a team that's dropped 5 straight and you secure the win against the team that's closest to you for first place in the division, it's big. And Nick Foligno, I mean, for at least for one game, Ziggy, he fit like a glove with Matthews and Marner.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that he started there. I thought he would have gotten him just, you know, I thought I would have thrown him on the third line, get him used to the surroundings, the systems, you know, start slow and then work himself in maybe to the top line as he got more comfortable. You got to remember, this guy didn't practice for a whole week. We don't know if he was skating in Sudbury or not, but being around the guys and being in NHL practice, that matters a lot. And then when you're trying to figure out where to be on the ice, you're going over special teams. It takes a week or two. So the fact that he got to the team, apparently he had the option to play or not, and chose to play, that says a lot. And as a teammate and as a coach, you want a guy that's going to jump in right away. I'm sure it would have been fine if he didn't want to play yesterday and said, hey, you know what, let me get a pregame skate in, let me get a full practice, and then let's go in. I thought he was overall pretty good. That's going to be a typical game. Smart with the puck, little plays, always on the defensive side, plays hard, physical, good on the forecheck. We'll go to the front of the net. We'll come back first and play, he'll be the first guy back defensively. And that's good if you're playing with Marner and Matthews. That's the kind of guy you need. We've seen what Hyman does, and it's a very Hyman-like game. I know they're similar in a lot of ways, but they both do, and they play the game a different way. And we'll see that as more games come. But to try to explain it, I think when Foligno's on the ice, you know he's on the ice from a defensive standpoint. Like if I'm playing against the Leafs and Foligno's on the ice, I know when I'm going back for the puck, I might be put through the end boards. That's going to change me as a defenseman when I'm playing against them, knowing that I have a player that's really physical. I'm not saying Hyman's not physical, but Foligno brings a different element of physicality to the Leafs. And that's what they're missing. Something like that. Somebody like a Simmons. But he also has that offensive upside where he does have good hands around the net. He'll be able to make the small plays to Marner and Matthews. And you saw a lot of them last night. It was just, Foligno's just a little bit of a step back and a couple awkward plays where he was trying to find Marner there through the neutral zone or Matthews. I thought he looked tired, but he changed quick, right? And he's going to look tired in a game like that. Believe me, once Foligno gets going, he's going to look like the most energized, hardest working guy on the ice. I can't imagine taking a week off and then just being thrown into a game on the road against one of the best teams in the league with the Jets. So I thought it was a good first outing. They get the 2 points. And I'm looking forward to seeing, like, I think once Hyman comes back, I think Hyman will be there. And I think Foligno will be further down the lineup. That's what I thought before. And I'm still going to say that. But you never know, right? I mean, you take off with, say he starts putting numbers up with Matthews and Marner. Yeah, it's a nice option to have when you can kind of interchange players on that line and for Matthews and Marner to still be good because they were excellent last night.
I'm seeing 71 buzz around on the ice. And of course, Sportsnet ran a clip of Mike Foligno, Nick's dad's game 5 overtime winning goal in Detroit, 1993. That brought a ton of memories back. You have to get Silent Vic to cut that one. You can get... You're looking at me.
I just don't know. Well, I don't know to take... my thing is I take over. Like, if I'm on with someone and they're struggling, I pick up the conversation until they get their life... Until they get their life back in order because I've choked a couple times on air and I just leave the screen and that's when you just take off with it because you know I get embarrassed. But and I don't have a mute button here at home.
The funny thing
was you're choking.
Yep. I was mid sentence and I'm like, I choke and I'm like, I don't think it sounded
nowhere to go.
I don't think it sounded that bad.
It wasn't bad.
So I tried to pick the sentence back up and it went again and I'm like,
yeah.
You gotta cough it out. That brought a ton of memories back.
You gotta cough it out.
See if you can see if you can pick up where I hit the off switch desperately here. 1993. That brought a ton of memories back.
It's like you took an extra long swing of beer and like a little bit of foam.
1993. I'm sure have some fun with this over the course of the show. I probably should have pointed it out. Imagine me just trying to push through and say, "Well, I hope nobody noticed." But I'm watching 71 rip around out there, and I'm thinking about Mike Foligno and, of course, the helmet and all that, but the big goal. The first thing I thought when Sportsnet was very early in the game showed the highlight of Mike Foligno's goal, it doesn't matter, Ziggy, which of the fun 93 highlights you see, whether it's Mike's overtime winner in Game 5 against Detroit, Nikolai Borishevsky's series winner in overtime, Game 7 against Detroit, Doug Gilmour's wraparound in overtime, Game 1 against St. Louis. Whenever those clips are played, it's like I'm taken right back. I'm almost 14. I'm 13 going on 14. It was the first time in our lifetimes, you're just a slight bit younger than me, first time in our lifetimes the Leafs were good. And you're snapped right back to those good times. And then the other thing I'm thinking of is, geez, it's nice to have a number 71 out there. Remember, that was David Clarkson's number.
That's right.
Right? Yeah, it's nice to have a number 71 out there out to exercise the demon of that number from more recent days. So, I mean, it's a depth pickup. It's a guy who can shuttle up. It's funny, as you say. I mean, he's playing on the left wing last night with Matthews and Marner. And is that going to be where Nick Foligno slots once this team is healthy, presuming it can get to that point for the playoffs? Who knows? But he is a guy who can play up and you're comfortable with him, or he can play on that third line and you're just as happy. He can check. He's a gritty guy, 200-foot player, as they like to say. It's a good get for the Leafs, and he's got 10 games or whatever's left here to get back into full game shape and be ready to go when it all counts.
Yeah, he played. So he picks up the assist on the empty netter. He's a plus one, 16 minutes of ice. I like the fact that it's another penalty killer, right? Reliable guy. When Spezza goes out to take, you know, Spezza's usually the draw guy, and then he'll come out after. And I like that they added another guy there. I think the penalty kill has struggled for a lot of the year. It's been getting better, but hopefully he'll add a little bit, right? Not just his play, but helping other players out and with some of the systems and some of the positioning. He's been around a long time, and little things like that help. He does a lot of little things in the game, like the penalty killing, sucking in forecheckers, finding, you know, Marner, Matthews in different spots. Very smart player. You don't see a lot of it. Like, you're watching the game, you're just going to be like, well, I didn't really notice him. I didn't really notice him last night, right? But he does a lot of good things out there from a hockey standpoint. And if you're behind the bench, you're Sheldon Keefe. You like reliable players where you know what they're going to do every night. And Foligno's one of those players. You want consistent players that, you know, they don't play perfect, but most of the night, you can pretty much, I can pretty much tell you what he's going to do before it happens. And you saw a lot of it last night. But 16 minutes, that's a lot for sitting in a room for a week and not getting a full practice in. I can't even, you know, I can't even imagine what that's like. I like I told you before, we usually get a day off every week. You probably get 3 to 4 days off a month. That first day back is really tough. Sometimes when the schedule opens up a little bit, you get 2 days off. After 2 days off, I come back on the ice on that third day. It's like I have never skated or touched a puck in my life before. That's the difference. And then once you stop playing, then you really notice how good of a shape you were in when you played. So the fact these guys were quarantining, you know, Dubois 2 weeks and now Foligno here with the Leafs for a week, it's impressive.
Leafs have generally been rolling the Jets, Ziggy. Like,
yeah, they own them.
Six in a row, they own them.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, I'm like, holy crap, they've won six in a row against the Winnipeg Jets. It doesn't feel like 7 games ago that Connor Hellebuck was standing on his head. Like, you can make the argument that the only reason the Jets have beaten the Leafs this year is because of Hellebuck's play earlier on in the season. And then last night they chase him, right? He's gone halfway through or about halfway through the first period. Two goals on two shots. I don't know if that does anything for a team psychologically. The Leafs have been beating Winnipeg when they've been playing them of late. But, man, that's the guy. Hellebuck is the guy. If the Leafs are running into the into the Jets in the playoffs, he's going to be the one guy we're honed in on. And what have we been talking about all week on this show? That there are certain questions about this Leafs team that I don't think we're going to be able to get a solid answer to before the playoffs start. Namely, the goaltending. Not necessarily who's starting game one, but how is that starter of game one going to perform? Well, if the Leafs get the Jets, that will be the question on the flip side. Can the Leafs put enough pucks at Connor Hellebuck to win that war? Because we assume that he's going to stand on his head for the Jets come playoff time.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of them, a lot of what they do this year. The Jets obviously is going to come down to Hellebuck. They didn't get the big defenseman they wanted, and the back end is a little bit lighter. I'm still concerned if I play the Jets in the playoffs. Like, I don't think it's a slam dunk. I don't think it's a slam dunk win for anybody in the North. Like, if the Leafs match up against Winnipeg in the first round, can you honestly sit here and say the Winnipeg Jets have no chance against the Leafs? Can you sit here and say that? I mean, I can't.
No, who would? Yeah.
So they had chances to win. I thought Campbell was excellent. I know his game got kind of lost. Foligno was there first game. A former Vezina guy that's been rock solid all year gets pulled.
Yeah, but with Campbell, it's 14 saves in the third period when you needed him, when you were protecting a one-goal lead for the entirety of the third period.
And that's what's important. Like, I didn't like the first two goals from a defensive standpoint. I thought there were two really bad giveaways by both of our top two pairings, right? Muzzin and Hall behind the net, and then Brody and Riley out front in the slot. Kind of, I think both plays are up. I think both plays are because of the Leafs system of let's not get it out. We would rather puck possession. So I didn't like the first two. And I'll get back to that. Remind me about puck possession in the own end on the first two goals. We'll talk about that at the end, but I thought Campbell was excellent. I thought he made big stops at the end of the first. I thought he made some big stops at the third. You know, to keep the lead. And that's what you want out of your player. I think a lot of this, like when we hear Campbell talk, and I was thinking about this yesterday, And he's given a hard time because he's hard on himself, right? I think a lot of what a guy like Campbell wants, and I've seen guys in his position before. I've seen goaltenders that were supposed to be the best in the league and run over the NHL and be starters, and then they're in the, and I've played with them. They're guys in the minors that just can't seem to find their way. Or I've seen guys in the NHL who have been backups their whole life and want to be that starter guy. It's not that they want to be perfect or they want to win every game. They just want to be that reliable goaltender where you have consistency, you know what you're getting out of him. Like, they want to be, like, outside of the Vezina from Hellebuck, goaltenders want to be a Hellebuck. Like, that's what they want to be, a reliable guy that helps his teams win. He steals games. He comes up with big saves. He comes up with timely saves. Doesn't let in easy goals. That's what Campbell wants to be. And you're going to say, well, he won 11 in a row. He can be that guy. Yeah, there are lots of stretches of those games. He didn't play perfect, but he knows, and I know that, and a lot of people in the hockey world know that just because you string together a lot of wins doesn't mean you're automatically the guy. It takes a while to build into that, and it takes more than 11 games. You know, you want to play 30, 40. He wants to be a guy that plays 60 games a year, and he knows he's not there yet, and that's what's frustrating. And you go into dips like he did prior to yesterday's game, and, you know, you question yourself, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, I'm not where I want to be. So that's what I was just kind of crossed my mind yesterday with Campbell, is that it's not about the wins and losses, and that it's about a guy that wants to be the player your coach can go to. Like, you want to be that consistent goaltender in net. You don't want to give up those soft goals. So, and it takes time. That's the hard part. It's not something where a guy plays one good game, you're like, okay, yeah, hey, you're the guy. It takes more than 11 games.
You got to stick with him when he struggles, yeah, like he has a little bit of late, right? I mean,
absolutely. So you throw him right back in. Absolutely. So yeah, you don't want to get pulled at the end of the day. When you start getting pulled after a bad goal, like, you don't want to get pulled. You don't want to give up bad goals. You don't mind giving up three in a game, even four. Like, it's okay some nights, but you don't want to give up the easy ones, and you want to make the timely saves. That's what it's about.
Right. I just think Riddick's performance the other night in Vancouver, unless it's a back-to-back situation, for as long as it's Campbell and Riddick here, it's got to be Jack's net down the stretch. I mean, as we've said, he's the most Canadian-American we've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, over the last couple of weeks, I've learned, you know, being a little bit too hard on myself isn't necessarily always the best thing. You know, just kind of let it go. And tonight, I just battled, and I thought the guys battled in front of me. So, you know, there's obviously things I always want to work on, and I'll continue to do that. But, you know, ultimately, we got the 2 points, and that's a huge win against a really good team.
And the Leafs are 6 points up, 10 games left to play on Winnipeg for first place in the North Division. So they're headed in the direction that they want to go on that front. We'll get back into what you want to discuss about giveaways in your own end. And I've got it's going to sound like a critical question, and it is, but it's also a simple question. Understanding, of course, that players are not perfect. It pertains to the TJ Brody giveaway on Winnipeg's second goal in the first period last night. Gord Stellick will jump on. We're all over the Blue Jays. They're 8-10, heading into Tampa Bay for a 3-game series this weekend. Tampa Bay is 10-9, so it's a big divisional matchup. American League East early in the season. There could be some reinforcements, either returning or set to debut in the case of George Springer. The Raptors with a big game tomorrow afternoon against a suddenly good New York Knicks team at Madison Square Garden. Perdita Felician, Pinball Clemens. It's a big show this morning. Gord Stellick's next. Now we're getting robe recommendations. Blair in Toronto says, Ziggy, try the Nordique Spa robes. That's
Nordique Spa?
I think the Nordique Spa is on the Quebec side of the Ottawa-Quebec border. Not too far from Ottawa if you're ever up in that area.
Okay.
Very nice place.
We're calling it JJ on Twitter. We're taking casual Fridays to a whole new level. We'll call it casual. We can call this casual Fridays going forward.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. Doesn't leave enough, or maybe leaves too much to the imagination, one way or the other. I don't want to screw that sentence up.
Yeah, I like that, JJ. That's good. Casual Fridays.
We're not playing a game called What Do I Have On Underneath? Although you are wearing a t-shirt. It's the t-shirt that got me.
Yeah, well, if I came with the chest hair just puffing out, that might be a little too much. If I came with the Tanner Rourke look, you might be a little bit upset
Tanner
about that.
Rourke.
If I just had the chain and the chest hair.
The three buttons undone, shirt wide open, and just popping 72-mile-an-hour curveballs.
Rourke's been getting his chest lift.
Yeah, and here's the problem. When he pitches, we can see them. Let me tell you that, Keith Hernandez. All right, I don't think Gord Stellick has any idea what he's walking into on this Friday morning here, but he will welcome him to the program now. Co-host with Nick Alberga of Leafs Nation pre and post here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Gord Stellick. Are you in a robe? Because Ziggy's in a robe. Ziggy's wearing a robe on FaceTime this morning.
Oh, God.
Gord.
God. Yeah. My robe days are over, but I did share a beverage with Keith Hernandez the brief time I was in York. He was actually playing for another team, but after a Ranger game, went out and somebody knew Keith Hernandez. This is before he helped Elaine move in Seinfeld and all that stuff.
Keith Hernandez.
Yeah, there you go.
Did you drive him to the airport?
I drove him to the airport, and what's the other one? Did he stop short? No, that's not the one the guy stopped short. He had, whatever. Keith Hernandez. I did not drive him to the airport.
Yeah, when he tried to kiss Elaine, I'm Keith Hernandez. And,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
she made the comment, I would check with the third base coach because I don't think he's waving you home.
That's right.
He was
at some party with some guy named Mookie or something like that. Right. Or she was. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, Mookie Wilson, probably the old Toronto Blue Jay from 1989. Yes. Remember that well. All right, amazingly, you came on to have a serious conversation this morning about the state of things with the Maple Leafs. I think it's a big win last night in this sense, Gord. I have a hard time. I know it's not 100% locked in, but I have a hard time now not seeing the Leafs in first place in the division at the end. I mean, they've been leading this thing for most, if not all, of the way. They've now got a 6-point lead on Winnipeg. We're down to almost single-digit games left in terms of number. I think they've got 10 to go. Big, big win for this team. And Nick Foligno, he's probably going to be a shuttle player. He's a guy you'd be comfortable putting up with Matthews and Marner on that first line. He's a guy you'd be content centering or playing wing on the third line. And for a guy who hadn't played in more than a week, thought he looked pretty good in his debut last night.
Yeah, I like so many components about it, Scott and Ziggy. And I just said that they had to make, I felt it was the kind of game they had to make a bit of a statement, much like the previous night. I thought the Montreal Canadiens made a real good statement to the Edmonton Oilers in that game. And you know, so they got out 2-0 lead. And then, you know, the statement last night was unfortunate. Some really poor, sloppy defensive play from guys that have been pretty steady for them, you know, TJ Brody and Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall. And so when it was tied 2-2, I thought at that point they made the statement. And the statement to me was, this is a Leafs team this year that has found ways to win. And that's the kind of difference I always find in any sport. You can look at statistics and all that, but the really good teams find ways to win a game 6-5 or win a game 1-0. And I thought at that point, you know, Simmons finally scoring, Joe Thornton being a bit more of a presence. But the big dogs, man, Austin Matthews, just, I mean, what a pleasure he is to be able to watch night in, night out. I don't know if we really fully appreciate it. Mitch Marner coming up big. John Tavares has played really well of late. And, you know, and good goaltending. Like Jack Campbell, after a couple of goals that weren't his fault, but just were kind of sloppy defensive play, was able to play really solid. So, you know, your star players and your goaltending, I think, are going to be the difference in the playoffs. And I thought Nick Foligno played fine. Like he's going to be fine. You see, when you haven't played for, what, 11 days or whatever it is, it takes a little bit of time. But, you know, you like the fact that he's out there and he looked fine.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be one of those versatile players, Gord, that, you know, you can throw him with the top two dogs up front, and or you can put him in a checking role. I don't even think it's an issue if he's on your fourth line come playoffs. I think you're going to need four lines in their first two rounds, and he's going to be that guy. You know, killed penalties last night. I thought he looked good there. where do you kind of see him eventually slotting in as we get going here, though?
Yeah, Ziggy, and you know that every team needs one of those guys. I don't even want to call him a tweener, just someone that, as to your point, can play on every line. And I think probably Nick Foligno is better than your average guy like that. So, you know, I don't know the fourth line, but you're right, because in the playoffs, quite often, you have to roll the four lines. So it always comes down to who has the most balanced lines, the most depth that way, and Nick Foligno is going to add it. But probably, obviously, because of the Zach Hyman injury, it made it an easy start. First game for Sheldon Keefe to put him there. And also, like I said, he's the new addition. You're new to the school. Put him with the cool kids in the class, right? Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews to start off and kind of get his feet wet a little bit that way. But he can play center. He can play wing. He's a guy that fought Ryan Reeves. And I just, you know, that just means that's another component that you don't have to put a Sabourin in the lineup when he's healthy again solely to, you know, have a fight to respond to something like, you know, say weeks ago that Cassian hit on John Tavares. So that's another component that I know Simmons has it, but, you know, Foligno's probably got it, a guy that will be playing more regular than Wayne Simmons.
With Gord Stelick on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So, Ziggy, jump in on this because you mentioned prior to the break that you wanted to speak to this, and I teed it up, Gord, by saying I got a really simple question for a guy like TJ Brody, who has been terrific this year for the Leafs. So, I'm just interested in the second goal against last night. You're competing on the right side wall for the puck, and you throw it into the middle of the ice. Obviously, you're hoping to get the puck to Morgan Rielly, your defense partner, who would then move it up the ice and start the transition into the neutral and hopefully offensive zone. But I wonder what a guy in that moment like TJ Brody is seeing. Because the puck obviously didn't reach Morgan Rielly, and bing, bang, boom, it was in the back of the Maple Leafs net 2 seconds later.
Yeah, and like Z knows that afterwards, if you're on a flight home, I mean, the fact you win would help basically, you know, mitigate that. But you'd be sitting around talking about how the hell did we do that? Why did we do that? Like, it's very out of character, Scott. You're right about that. I Sheldon Keefe quite often has talked about, you know, a team about situational awareness at times that has left the Leafs when they've had some struggles, and just about, you know, what's the best play you can make? What's the safe play you can make? All those things. And those have to register rather quickly. Now, the best play you may not make it, but you got to make a safe play, you know, by and large, particularly when you're a defenseman like that. And he's been doing that. He's been doing that all year. And to your point, Scott, you know, I just found like, wow, the Leafs are up 2-0. And then you said, man, these are brutal giveaways. These are uncharacteristically brutal giveaways and really mental faux pas. So, I mean, that's flat out how I saw it. That's a guy that 99 times out of 100 doesn't make that play.
Yeah, I thought the Brody giveaway to Rielly, I thought almost Rielly could have been in a better position, right? It's a lot of times giveaways, it's not so much the player, it's the guy he's going to. So Riley's, he kind of got closer to Brody when he should have got further away. But I'm with you, Gord, like safe play, like in a situation like that, it's like high off the glass, get it out, live to fight another day. And the other one by Muzzin, I thought was worse. And if you looked at Muzzin's reaction after, I don't know what you think of this, Gord, but I thought it was almost like when he put his head up in the air and like in disgust, it was almost like that's a play a guy like Muzzin would never make. But the fact that he's with the Leafs, it's a puck possession, D to D, bring it back. I just feel like I would never see Muzzin make that play in L.A.
I don't know about never, but you're right. You're right. And since he's like, again, you know, it's been the when you're one of the better teams, you know, you play that smart hockey. And the other point, to your point, you're right about before that quite often, as you know, anything in life, when you have a bit of a slip, when someone covers your ass, you're always going, "Oof, thanks a lot for that," you know, like that. So you're kind of saying that, you know, Morgan Rielly is part of the problem in TJ Brody's past, but also at the end of the day, it comes back to Brody being responsible because Rielly maybe wasn't where he thought he was going to be in that. So there were a lot of those kind of tweaky things, but, you know, Jake Muzzin, I'm big on Jake Muzzin. He just had some weird, last couple of games, he's had a few weird plays in all. And that's why I like that, you know, to get back to the problem, the last few games that Jack Campbell really played solid. Like Jack Campbell, you know, like other games, the goaltending let you down and other things were strong. Last night, the team defense was a part that was soft and he was really needed on the defensive side. And I thought that was a real another statement, positive game for Jack Campbell when he really needed it last night.
Well, Gordon, if there's an arc here for Jack Campbell, and who knows where it goes over the final nine games, but if there's an arc here for Jack Campbell, the 11-0 start to his season is a great launching point. The adversity he's faced over the last couple of weeks, the coming back down to earth, if you will, if he can bounce back with some big periods like a 14-save third period last night and some big games here down the stretch, I think that's more important than the start, because one of my main concerns heading into the playoffs is the goaltending question. And the fact that you know, whether you're on this show or somewhere else, Gord, you're going to be dealing with it as well. Who's starting in goal number one? And more importantly, number two, how is that guy going to perform? We don't want those questions going into the playoffs, but we're going to have them.
Yeah, no, and you want to know who's going to start in goal, because all three are playing great, like the Carolina Hurricanes three right. goalies are right now. Rather, you know, can anyone stop the puck? And you're absolutely right about that. I think, and you know, Scott, that's a good point, because Jack Campbell's problem has always been, and he says it, you know, he got off on the wrong foot professionally, had some injury woes, and then just confidence-wise, couldn't get it going, never got it going. And now, you know, life is not quite like breaking a record all the time, 11 consecutive wins. Now you have some adversity. And after all those years when adversity was something that did you in as far as becoming an established NHL goaltender, how do you deal with it? Now, it's not complete yet, but certainly last night showed that, okay, this recent blip, instead of that was the unraveling, you came back with a really strong game and a game that needed a statement. So I really concur that, particularly in his case, where Freddie's just cool hand Luke. You know, Freddie Anderson's just, he's the cool dude. He's unflappable. That's part of his DNA, which is a positive. Jack Campbell, his makeup has been part of his struggles.
Single game betting is almost legal in Canada. Only requires royal assent, Gord, from the Senate here. Whatever that means, it needs royal. The queen needs to sign off on my ability to throw down money on the Ottawa-Vancouver game last night. And some people are texting into 590-590 going, what the hell happened to the Leafs in Vancouver? The Senators beat the Canucks last night. Well, I think it's the Canucks in part hitting the wall, but it was also the goaltending, especially for the Leafs on Tuesday. I thought the Leafs outplayed the Canucks both nights. Right? And it was the goaltending. So we got to, I think, take a step back here sometimes and just not freak out about the fact that Vancouver took them twice. And it was a Vancouver team playing on a bit of adrenaline. But I think had the Leafs had any halfway goaltending in especially the second of those two games, they would have come away with the 2 points. Vancouver didn't exactly hand the Leafs their pants, as is being suggested on the text line.
Well, Sunday night, I'm not going to step back from that game, because you're talking about the odds. Like we said, Elliot Friedman brought up the fact that was the longest shot home team the Vancouver Canucks were, as far as prop betting goes, since 2006. And that one, you had a 2-0 lead, and you didn't find a way to win. You'd already busted, you know, broken the dam. You'd beat the goaltender twice. So I still, you know, to me, that's, I just, you know, a statement games needed at different times. And that to me was, okay, you're gonna put your boots on them, crush them when you have that lead and take advantage of their hardship, and didn't. And I'm going to give Canucks all the credit in the world. And now it's water under the bridge, because you needed a statement game last night. Last night, if it kept going, then all of a sudden, you know, it's just not going in a direction that's good before the playoffs. You look at what Vegas is doing in their division, Carolina, say, in their division, you know, the Washington Capitals in their division. Like, the better teams now are kind of saying, yeah, we're kicking ass as we head to the playoffs, where you're kind of looking at the Scotia North. If it continued this way for the Leafs, and I mean, they got to keep continuing getting their share of wins. Everyone seems to be limping into the playoffs in the North Division. You want to be going in strong.
Thanks for this, Gord. Always enjoy it. And, you know, we'll be doing it again next week, and looking forward to it.
Okay, please tell Ziggy not to be wearing a robe, okay?
Well, the robe is okay as long as there's a T-shirt on underneath like there is this morning.
Yeah, no chest hair. No chest hair.
Yeah. He's although that could be the next step as you work toward that manscaped endorsement you're after.
I'm going to Tanner Rourke it. I'm going to do that. I'm going to put a chain on. Oh, yeah.
You're going to Tanner Rourke it. Here's what you should do. You should look like Tanner Rourke. You should get on a mound beside him, and we'll have you two measure the velocity on your fastballs. Who can throw a fastball harder, Ziggy or Tanner
Roark? I've thrown out a couple first pitches, and I've thrown out one. I've been up there for a couple with the team, and let me tell you, it is nothing pretty. It is not good. I thought it was like right down the middle. I watched after. I was like, am I right-handed or left-handed?
That's not the question you want to be asking after a ceremonial first pitch, especially if the catcher, the guy receiving the pitch, is asking it. That's Gord Stellick, co-host of Leafs Nation pre and post with Nick Elberga here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Is Kyle Lowry a true Torontonian? When we tell you what he says he misses about the city, you're going to wonder if he's crazy. Kramer's apartment at your place. I'm staring at it on FaceTime. Just plants.
It's bad.
Ziggy in a plants. Robe.
I got the light on, the red light. What was that? I got a sauna downstairs. No, not the sauna, the hot tub. The neon light from some chicken place.
Kenny!
What was the name of that place? Roosters?
Kenny Rogers. It was Kenny Rogers Chicken.
Okay.
Right? Kenny.
Yeah.
So did you see, there's a USA Today piece on Kyle Lowry. And one of the things that he said he misses about living and playing in Toronto is driving on the Gardner and the DVP. He misses the Gardner Expressway and the Don Valley Parkway. Is he the first person in the history of this planet who knows anything about this city who says he misses the Don Valley Parkway and the Gardner Expressway? I have said to people, Ziggy, and you know me, I'm a GTA guy, born and bred. I will die loyal to Toronto. I don't think I can live here once I'm past 60 because I envision myself having a stroke on one of those two highways.
I read a report that the Don Valley Parkway is one of the worst, if not the worst, in North America.
For congestion.
I heard that the Don Valley rivals, what is the one in LA? What is it called? Is it the 405?
There's a 5, there's a 405, there's a 101. There's a lot down in LA, but I think it might be the 405. Yeah.
So I heard that it rivals the major highways in California, which are, if you've never been down there, are absolutely disgusting. Like if you hate the Don Valley, I'm telling you in LA, it's just, I don't know if it's the nice weather or that some of the highways are 18 lanes wide.
Or the fact that 15 million people live in the area.
Yeah, there's a ton of people.
Yeah.
But the Don Valley, my day will usually consist, this is pre-pandemic, would consist of traffic times. Like, I'm not going to do anything during traffic. It's like, I'll wait till the weekend. I'll wait later in the day. I'll wait midday. I will not do anything during traffic times. The Don Valley is the worst highway I've ever been on, and I have to take it. I'm in the East End, so if I need to go anywhere, I'm on the Don Valley, and it is awful, especially at the 401 junction.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he likes to be on the Don Valley. Interesting.
He's missing it.
Well, you got to remember though. Also, remember this: athletes don't take it during rush hours. Usually, maybe in the morning. But when you leave the arena, it's usually late at night. It's not bad. Or when you leave after practice at 12:31, it's pretty light. And yeah, it's a great view, right? You get the city in the background. It's a fun highway to be on. But during rush hour, it literally goes from my house to the downtown core. I'm 12, 13 minutes. if it's in traffic, you're looking at 45, 55. And if there's an accident, I'm on there for 90 minutes. So I don't know what he misses it. Wow.
Better load your favorite music. You're going to be cycling through three or four turns. We got a big show this morning. Pinball Clemens will join us, the GM of the Argos. And obviously the CFL season has been delayed until August 5th at this point. We'll touch on that. It's also 30 years since the Argos poached Rocket Ishmael from the University of Notre Dame to play in the CFL. He chose the CFL over the NFL. Ended up in the NFL later on, but this was a huge deal at the time. We'll relive that with Pinball, who was a player on the Argos at the time. David Ambers ahead. Ben Nicholson-Smith at 7:35. Blue Jays into Tampa Bay to take on the Rays. We'll get into the Leafs, the Jays, as Hugh jumps in on the panel, and the Raptors and this three-headed race with Chicago and Washington for that 10th and final playoff spot in the East. Which turtle will move slowest and get in? Put money down on the Senators to beat the Canucks last night. Single game betting,
you would have won,
was legal.
I can't wait.
I mean, it would mean more if I'd said that yesterday than it does now, because hindsight's easy. The Senators beat the Canucks 3-0 late in Vancouver last night, but you just knew the Canucks were going to hit a wall, and they scraped by against the Leafs because of inferior goaltending by the Maple Leafs. So looking forward to this, though.
Yeah, as soon as the Queen signs off, like you said,
the Queen
will be able to
put Queen Elizabeth. All that stands between you, Michael Thomas Zigomanis, you, Hugh Winter Burrell, all that stands between you and voting, betting on a Maple Leafs game, betting on a Habs game, whatever. It's Queen Elizabeth.
Yep.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it.
Do you guys honestly think it's going to change that much, like single game betting? Like, what do you think the biggest issues are going to be?
Well, I think so, Ziggy, because we all do the pro line stuff, and there you have to parlay. It's got to be three.
Right.
But how many times have we had two, right?
And the theory, and the theory, of course, is to protect against match fixing.
Absolutely.
Or undue influence all that. But and there'll be safeguards in place. But the world is changing now, and this is all happening, especially over in Europe in the soccer stadiums. There are betting consoles at stadiums. We all have apps on our phones. Now you're going to be able to go to a Maple Leafs game and sit there and bet along as the game goes.
Yeah, you're talking about in-game betting, which is like the next step after single game betting. You can actually bet as the game is going on. Yeah. I think it's great. Ziggy, are you going to take part in this? Are you you a gambler? Yes, you are.
No, I don't bet. I don't bet on sports, but I'll have friendly bets for Swiss Chalet or A&W or Burger King or Taco Bell, but no, I don't.
Mark Savard, you can DM me now and remind me that Ziggy hasn't paid up.
Yeah. Leadoff is not responsible for any money lost on a Ziggy lock.
I don't play like the odd NFL game. Yeah. Hockey has been a no, just, you know a lot of guys in the league, know a lot of people in the game, like for obvious reasons, Scotty just mentioned, don't really kind of want to go there.
That makes sense, but for sure.
I think it's, if you do it responsibly and you play within your limits and you have some fun with it, by all means, go and have some fun gambling. Obviously, I remember the prop bets in the NFL on the Monday Nighter, and I don't know if they still have those around. I think Proline had them on, right? Where you could, I mean, everybody has them now, right?
Who's going to win the coin toss?
How many yards are you going to run? How far is the punt? And then if you like matched up 16 of them, you won like $1 million bucks. Or so. Like it was something ridiculous.
First pass of the game going to be completed, incomplete, whatever.
Yeah.
And if you got one of 16, if you got like half of them right, it was like you won $5. Like, it was almost impossible to win anything.
Yeah.
But that was fun.
Winning 16 prop bets in the same game. That's a tough one. That's not going to happen.
But it was fun. But like, imagine you're on your phone and you're at a game and it's like, okay, next punt return. How far is the runner? How far is it going to come back? That's kind of fun. Like, but I don't know how that's going to work. The single game betting. I think it should be passed. I think it should be allowed. And I don't see it really affecting the game much. I know fixing the games and matches. I don't see that happening. I guess it's just from my experience. I can't imagine anything of like a player or any of the refereeing I know officials fixing a game.
No, I mean, we'll assume the honor system here. And I think it's just, this is a long time coming. This is a revenue stream, a massive revenue stream.
Yes,
and here's a question that cannot be answered at this moment. Coming out of the pandemic, what's this all going to look like? I do think that the Maple Leafs can count on 18,000 people being in the seats at Scotiabank Arena eventually. I think that first game back when crowds are allowed back in, as long as we feel safe about it, enough people have been vaccinated, we're not in some torrential wave like we are right now, I do think fans will get back. Imagine September baseball this year. I don't know if it's going to happen. I'm not counting on it, but imagine consequential September baseball, Blue Jays in a playoff race this year and returning to the Rogers Center. I think you'd have 45,000-50,000 people, but people just want to get out.
I think as more, like you say, as more people get vaccinated, as we get closer and closer to hopefully getting out of this, people have a lot of money to spend right now. Right. They want to go out and they want to spend.
But what
it.
You don't know is just how people's habits have changed over the last 14-15 months. And maybe people have, the notion of watching a sporting event at home has grown on people, but teams can tap into revenue generation through single game betting, et cetera. I think society is pivoting right now. I'm not smart enough to know where all of this is going, and I'm not going to pretend like I am. But I think the way that we do things is changing here, and I think teams are going to have to get ahead of the curve and try to tap into alternate revenue sources, because I mean, obviously, the traditional way has been upended
in
the last year plus.
You don't necessarily need, though, the pandemic to be over for this to really
take
hold.
Well, that's part of it, too, right?
I mean, they've been doing it in the States for years.
You can't count on ticket sales.
Yeah.
You can't count, if there aren't people in the stadium, you can't count on the hot dogs and the beer. And I know you can shop online on a team website or wherever you would get your jerseys or whatever, but you can't go into the team gift shop at the stadium or at the arena right now. So that's all lost revenue.
Yeah.
That's all revenue that isn't there. Yes, there are the TV contracts and all that stuff, but think of the Maple Leafs. Like, think of the business that they do. And again, online, yes, I get it. But a ton of merchandise is being peddled every home game.
Oh, yeah.
Ton of popcorn, ton of beer, ton of hot dogs for the kids, all of that stuff. And it's all out the window 41 times a season.
And that pro shop is lined up out the door on game night too, right? So yeah, you're right. They'll get their piece. They'll get their beaks
wet. There you go. Hugh Brull, throw down $10 on which team's going to score the first goal in tonight's game. Help your favorite hockey team recoup some of that lost revenue. Be a good citizen.
Yeah, okay.
Honest.
I'm a terrible sports bettor.
Well, that's the whole point.
Terrible.
They're counting on you.
Yeah,
they're counting on you to be terrible. That's what they want.
Casinos and sports books aren't built on people who are good at it. That's for sure.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Absolutely. We're getting some texts into 590-590. Doug in Brantford, you guys talked about what Kyle Lowry misses about Toronto. And of that, of course, the DVP and the guard. He even misses driving on the DVP and the guard.
Are you sure he was serious when he said that?
Oh, absolutely. 110% serious. I mean, who doesn't miss the Gardner and the DVP? I'm pretty sure that he was kidding. He's like, I miss Toronto even the Gardner and the DVP. I would take a drive on the DVP to get back to Toronto right now. Doug in Brantford wants to know, what does Ziggy miss about Lowell Mass?
I miss the Shamrock, which was like the only establishment.
The Shamrock.
Well, I bring this up a lot. You know what I used to hang
when the Irish arrived in Massachusetts 400 years ago, they opened a pub and called it the Shamrock, and it still lives to this day. Is that what you're saying?
Ziggy, that sounds like the diviest bar in the history of dive bars.
Things happen there, I bet.
So I've brought this up, I think, once last year. A guy I used to hang out with was the fighter, Mickey Ward, before he was Mickey Ward.
Yes. Yeah.
I know. Like, he would literally be out in town. He was from Lowell.
And he was at the Shamrock, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. I mean, we used to hang out, go out. I mean, no one really, it was just like, it's hard to explain. I mean, what was the movie called, Hugh? The one with Mickey Ward. And do you remember the name of that?
Was it The Boxer? Was it called The Boxer?
Well, there was a movie called The Wrestler.
Yeah, that was with Mickey Rourke.
With Mickey Rourke.
Not Irish Mickey Ward.
Right.
I'll look that up.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke and The Wrestler, Mickey Ward and a boxer. That feels like we're a little too close.
The Fighter. The Fighter.
Okay.
So it came out in 2010. So if you watch the movie The Fighter, it is literally very close to what I lived in and the guys I wouldn't hang out with that crew. I would just hang out with Mickey, but he'd be out all the time, you know, on the main drag there and be sitting in the corner and no one would really care. Like, this is, I'm talking back in 2001, I'd first met him, and he was fighting all these like small circuit matches, but he wasn't big then. I'm trying to think of the, like, what match was it where he became massive? Like, I don't remember his history.
It was the trilogy with Arturo Gatti, the trilogy of fights, which were if you haven't seen them, we're getting off topic here, but if you haven't seen those fights, they are outstanding. Really,
well,
really good
that's
fights.
When you move into your new condo, Hugh, and you invite the show over for the housewarming party, it's an F1 race.
Followed
and
by
the trilogy with Ward and Gotti.
Oh my goodness, that sounds like an amazing night.
But just make sure there are chicken wings.
So this Mickey Ward would be out, and that's what I remember of Lowell. Like, they had cobble streets. You had to watch out what streets you went down because you'd blow a tire out. You wouldn't be out late at night unless you were like out somewhere. You wouldn't be walking around. Not that it was the most dangerous city I have ever been in, but you had to kind of be careful. Like, you'd go with someone.
It wasn't the safest city you'd been in either, by the sounds of it.
It's a city. It's half hour north of Boston. And you know what? I haven't been back since 2004. So it's been a while. I'm sure it's changed a lot.
I mean, I'm sure.
But it was an old mill city. Like, 100 years ago, it was a thriving city. Like, they have all the original buildings with all the windows knocked out of them. It's got a little bit of a Detroit vibe to it.
What are you, the heritage minister for Lowell, Mass? I feel like we should do a one-minute segment every day on this show.
Well,
tell me something about Lowell, Mass.
Put together a tourism video of Lowell, Mass.
I'm scared to tell you my nickname that I had when I played in Lowell.
Okay, but see, now you can't do that.
Come on.
Now you have to share it. You can't just say, I'm not going to tell. I had a nickname when I played in Lowell, but I'm not going to tell you.
You got to say it. What is it?
All right. The guys would. It's not that big. Turn that off. The guys would call me the mayor of Lowell.
If we get Ryan Beta on,
he'll right away.
He's the guy who barfed in your car, right?
Yeah. He puked in my car. He's the one that he started it, and then the whole team, it was like the mayor. So that's what I got called in the room.
Kind of like Sean Casey in Cincinnati, the ex-MLB, the first baseman for the Cincinnati Reds for all those years. He was the mayor, most popular guy in town.
Did you walk around like wearing the mayor's medallion?
Did you wear a robe?
Sash?
I wasn't popular enough to wear a robe.
Oh, my God. The mayor of Lowell, Mass, Mike Zigomanis. Leafs beat the Jets last night, so they're 6 points up on Winnipeg for first in the North Division. The Raps go into Madison Square Garden tomorrow afternoon, take on the Knicks. They're in a three-way race, if that's what you want to call it, for the 10th seed in the Eastern Conference. The Bulls and the Wizards are right there as well. Well, I've been calling it a tortoise race. Yeah. The turtle that moves the least slow is going to get into this thing.
Mm.
That's the only way to describe it.
Yeah, right now they're tied for 11th with the Bulls. So they're a half game back of the Wizards for that lucrative 10th playoff spot.
And all of a sudden you wake up one day, and I mean, between Randall and our guy, RJ, the Knicks are a pretty good basketball team.
Very good team this year. Right now, they'd be home in the first round of the playoffs.
Isn't it amazing how the Knicks start winning basketball games and the chat about James Dolan just dies? Well, he hasn't had Charles Oakley to kick out of the arena this year.
This is true.
But it's the
old sports adage, right? Like, winning cures everything. Just win.
It's amazing.
Just win, baby.
You're a bad owner.
They look hungry. I'm telling you, they look hungry right now. And that's a lot to do with who they've brought into the lineup right now. When you have the original core like this, and it's like, okay, we're trading everyone, let's tank. And then all of a sudden you bring in new guys. It's a different team.
Well, and Tom Thibodeau is a highly regarded coach.
Yep.
And I'll never forget Jim Rome. You know, Jim Rome, he had Tom Thibodeau on. It's got to be more than a decade ago. Thibodeau was still coaching the Bulls. And I'm listening to this interview, and Rome is going on asking a question about, so like, how did your wife handle your schedule and this and that? Tom Thibodeau, I'm paraphrasing, but Tom Thibodeau was like, I'm not married. I've never been married. Basketball's my life.
Oof.
Like, it sounds like he goes dedicated to bed at night and hugs a basketball.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of those guys that probably shows up at like,
he's a lifer, know,
6:30 in the morning.
He's a lifer.
Yeah.
And you always wonder when a guy like that goes to a place like New York where there's a lot of interruption and influence from above.
Distraction, yeah.
Stay the hell out of my way. Let me run this ship.
Well, the NBA is so much better, and it's been a while, but the NBA is so much better when the New York Knicks are good.
Right.
Just like the NHL is better when the Leafs and Habs are good.
And I also think, with due respect to Jersey, I think it matters more that the Nets are good and are called Brooklyn because that's where they play.
Yeah.
New Jersey's just New Jersey. Yeah. Now, New Jersey's 20 minutes. The Meadowlands is 20, 25 minutes from New York City. I think it matters that the Brooklyn Nets are playing in Brooklyn. That's a borough rivalry now. Yep. And they got huge names, obviously. Harden and KD and Kyrie and all of that. Steve Nash is the coach. Like, it's if the Knicks and the Nets are good at the same time... Mm. I think that
playoff series. Imagine if they met in the playoffs.
Right.
Wow.
Well, it'd be like Rangers Islanders, and there would be a lot of Knicks fans at Barclays, right, for the road games. No question about it.
Well, they've been banged up too, though, right? The Nets, like,
Harden's hurt right now.
I mean, they're in trouble. Yeah. I mean, I don't know who's playing for them. KD, like, it's they've been had so many guys in and out of the lineup this year. They just seem to always get it done.
And the Blue Jays go into Tampa Bay. So
House of Horrors.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to say that. You told me yesterday I'm not allowed to say that.
I'm making fun of it. No more House of Horrors. No more Gibby. Yeah. We need Gibby on again to put this one. We need to put this one to bed.
It's true, though. They are terrible there.
They were bad there when the Rays stunk.
Yeah.
Coming into the league 20 years ago.
I had the stat in my last update. They have an all-time winning percentage of like 347. They're 7-21 there in the past four
I can't
seasons.
Remember what year it was. It was 14 or 15. It was a big deal when they took 2 out of 3 against the Rays because they hadn't won a series in Tampa Bay since 2008. You may say, well, how bad is that? Well, the Rays are a division rival. You go and play 3 series a year at Tropicana Field. This isn't like an AL West team going there once a year and taking a flyer. This is And bad things would happen.
Yeah,
like
strange.
Weird stuff in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings.
Well, balls hitting the rack.
The catwalks.
The superstructure up there. Yeah, it's just a really bizarre place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, the Tampa Bay Lightning played hockey there for a couple years at the start
really?
Of there.
That's right.
No way.
It was called the Thunderdome.
Yep.
It was called the Thunderdome.
That's right, yeah.
And before what is now Amalie Arena was built in downtown Tampa... Like, I think Eric Lindros and the Flyers played a playoff series. The first time the Lightning made the playoffs, they played the Flyers and Lindros, and their home games were in the Thunderdome. That's now the Rays baseball stadium, Tropicana Field. But anyway, it sounds like George Springer is going to get back potentially tomorrow, maybe Sunday. It sounds like some of the bullpen reinforcements are close. That's all good news. Teoscar Hernandez is in good shape COVID-wise, but is not going to play tonight because you want to get him some activity before you throw him right back into baseball. He's been sitting around at home for 10 days recovering. So they're getting some reinforcements. Here's the key. If they play defense, if they play defensively like they have been so far this season, they're going to cough up a game or two this weekend. The Tampa Bay Rays don't make mistakes. That team pitches well. They get timely hits. Fundamentally, they're as sound a group. They have to be because they can't spend any money. Fundamentally, they're as sound a baseball team as there is year in and year out. If the Jays go and kick the ball around this weekend, it could cost them. And you don't want to go down there and get swept.
Well, you talked about that yesterday with they gave the Red Sox too many opportunities to get back in that game.
That game, yeah. Wednesday.
They were fortunate to get that victory.
It was far closer than it should have been.
Yeah, they can't do that. You're right. They can't do that against the Rays for sure.
With Mats, Ray, and Ryu pitching, I'm going to predict a sweep this weekend.
Whoa, for who?
There you go.
For the Jays?
I'll take that.
Are you going to predict?
Yeah, I'm predicting a sweep. This is not. Has this happened before?
Oh,
I love
sure
when you get
happened.
The. I love when you get. I love when you get the pen and paper out. You're like, let me. Like, yeah, let me mark this
write.
One down.
Ziggy says the Jays sweep the Rays.
We're gonna come. Yep. So we come back. It's gonna be a sweep, and I can't wait to see that same look on your face on Monday.
Is this a Ziggy lock?
I'm not locking this one, but I'm telling you, we need to change it up. We need to do something different. All right. No more talk about we can't go into Tampa and win. I don't like this. I don't like that discussion because I've been involved in it where some arenas you play in, you can't win. It gets in your head. And if it's in your head today or yesterday when they're going in there, that's the way you're going to play. Change it up.
Like
no more House of Horrors.
Self-fulfilling prophecy is what you're talking about.
Yeah, you got to change it up. I mean, it's a tall order. I think taking two of three would be really good, but... Yeah, we're going positive right now. Going with the sweep.
All right.
I feel like I should make a bet on this, but I'll tell you what, it would if the Jays, because I obviously want the Jays to do well, but if the Jays win tonight and tomorrow and we go into Sunday with this actually a thing, it's gonna ruin my entire Sunday morning. we'll give it some thought. We'll give it some thought. By the way, I've got a DM from Mark Savard. I called him out and he said, I'll take Swish LA $50 gift card and $50 cash, Ziggy, because you owe him $250, right? You owe him a Swish LA dinner and another. That's his claim. He says, pay your debts.
It's up to $250 now.
Well, I think you owe him two half chickens with fries and maybe a salad. You got to get him a. They got some kick ass spring rolls at Swish LA now, too.
Oh,
don't
yeah.
discount the spring rolls.
I'd go there just for the sauce. Chicken sauce. I'll drink that. Get that.
The
in
chalet
me.
Sauce.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Just have
who
you ever
does,
walked in?
Who
just,
doesn't drink the sauce that's left over?
I know a guy that doesn't like it. I know someone.
What?
I know one person. I know. Can you believe it?
Name.
I think
names.
That is awful.
Name.
Tell whoever it is. That's an awful take.
this guy was robbed of taste buds.
I know.
Buds.
Can you believe it?
Robbed of taste buds. Who doesn't drink the Swish LA sauce, the leftover Swish LA sauce? That should be a Twitter poll question this morning. Do you drink the leftover Swish LA sauce that you haven't dipped your chicken and fries in? This is where we're at on a Friday morning. Ben Nicholson Smith.
It's casual Fridays.
Yes, yes.
This is what we talk about. Ziggy's we talk about what we're going to eat for the
this
week.
Is pretty casual.
Ziggy's got an open robe. Thank God there's a t-shirt underneath. David Amber at the top of the hour, back into the hockey. Ben Nicholson Smith, I'm going to say, hey, when are we getting Springer back? When are we getting the bullpen reinforcements back? How's Teoscar doing? And this team needs to play more fundamentally sound baseball if they're going to get a win out of any of the games this weekend in Tampa Bay. We'll touch on all of that with Ben next. We did some digging. Not that we're big Portland State basketball fans on this program, but Portland State just hired a brand new head coach to run its men's basketball program, NCAA, of course. His name is Jace Coburn, and let's meet Jace Coburn.
I'm hungry and passionate. I don't eat breakfast in the morning so I can come to work hungry. So when I get to lunch, I'm hungry. And that's just the kind of person I am. I know my 2003 Chevy Tahoe's got a lot of play this week so far. It doesn't have AC, and it doesn't have heat. And the reason I do that is so I can practice my mental toughness during the winter when it's cold, and I can practice my mental toughness during the summer when it's hot. That's the type of person I am.
Jace Coburn, new head coach of Portland State. I bet a bunch of 18-year-olds are going to listen to that and figure it out in about a week.
My car doesn't have AC, so I can't really say anything. I definitely don't do it.
Is that because you're practicing your mental toughness?
No.
Are you serious? Your car doesn't have AC?
My 2010 Cherokee, the AC doesn't work on it. Anybody out there want to fix my AC?
Dude, I'm telling you.
I'm just, at this point, I'm like, it's 11 years old. It's like, come on.
Yeah, but
honestly, I'm fine. The only reason I need AC in my car is if I have a suit and I'm going to an event, or I'm going to do Leafs Nation Network, going to do a Marley game, or coming down to Sportsnet, whether I'm doing, you know, a hit where I need a suit on, which wasn't
you
very
just,
often.
You but. Just listed a lot of reasons why you need AC, dude.
But
like a lot of reasons.
But
the only reasons I need AC are every single reason when it's 45 Celsius in Toronto in late June.
Yeah, but where am I wearing a suit right now? Like, I'm not doing games on Hockey Night in Canada.
You're wearing a robe on the radio this morning. I can tell you
know,
that.
I kind of like it, actually. I might make it casual Mondays, too. So, yeah, I don't really need AC. I don't need AC unless I'm going somewhere and I'm dressed up and I don't want to sweat through. Like I'll wear a suit in my car. They're like, it's like, it's for sure fake leather in my car. It's not real leather. And I will literally have like pit stains, like behind my knees,
my
whole back. Yeah, sorry. I'm just saying that's why I need the AC in my car. You know, just absolute cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburgers. The very informal Twitter poll question of the morning: do you drink the Swiss Chalet sauce that's left over after your meal? Yes or no? 65% of respondents in early voting saying no. I'm extremely disappointed and quite surprised. We're going to ask our guest this question this morning. Ben Nicholson-Smith is our first guest. He is a Blue Jays and MLB insider and the baseball editor for Sportsnet.ca. And he is brought to us by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Is Springer coming back? What's the deal with Teoscar and the bullpen arms? All of these are important questions, but the most important question is, Ben, do you drink the Swiss Chalet sauce that's left over after your meal?
Well, you know, Scotty, in theory, I love this idea. I think go for it. If people want to do that, they absolutely should. In practice, being a vegetarian, it's not a decision
right.
point that I come across very often. But I like the idea of theory.
Dude, you can dip some tofu. You can dip some tofu into the Chalet sauce.
I didn't know, Ben. Thanks. Yeah, I gotta form my team here at Sportsnet, our veggie team here.
Oh God,
oh, where are we? You're a vegetarian too.
He says he's plant based. I don't know what the difference between vegetarian plant based is, but
you know what, Ben? I went full vegan for almost 7 years, five of which I was still playing, and it was really hard. But just being a vegetarian, I mean, that's tough in itself. Like, there's going to be cheese or egg and something you're going to have, some sauce. So it's almost the same. That's why I tell Scotty, plant-based, I'll have the odd piece of fish here. So I guess pescatarian, but it's 99% plant-based.
Yeah, I've never done the full vegan. I mean, that would be, and I can't imagine, you know, doing that while also trying to maintain an elite athlete's fitness regimen. Like, that would be tough, but good for you for doing that. That's awesome.
All right, let's get to the serious questions of the day. George Springer, Teoscar Hernandez, and any of the relief arms who are close, Romano, Chatwood, etc. What do we know sitting here this morning about their potential returns?
It sounds like Jordan Romano should be back as soon as he's eligible, and that is the 25th of April, I believe, so this weekend. And Chatwood should be back soon as well. So, I mean, at that point, we'll probably start to see a little bit less. You know, and Anthony Castro and Joel Piamps have mostly been good, but, you know, they've been in some very high leverage spots early on, and I think that'll start to shift pretty soon.
So I heard we made a big trade, and I was kind of looking up Jeremy Beasley. Is this like the new savior right now, or is this just a reliever depth guy?
It's so funny how those two poles, those two opposites, can actually kind of converge pretty quickly here, just because of all the injuries and because of how quickly teams turn through bullpen guys. So, you know, at this point, he's very much an extra guy. He's sent to the alternate site. He's got one game of big league experience and really hasn't pitched as a reliever much in his pro career. But we've seen with Piamps and Castro, Tommy Malone being another kind of under-the-radar signing who just emerges, and now he's, I think, fourth on the team in innings pitched, just behind TJ Zoik at number three. So there's opportunity on this Blue Jays pitching staff. And so, you know, as much as Beasley kind of seems like an afterthought now, I won't be surprised at all if he's pitching in a high-leverage spot in 10 days.
Just circling back to Springer, we expect him this weekend sometime, do we not?
Yeah, I think that's the fair expectation. I mean, based on what Ross Atkins said yesterday, Springer's going to play in a sim game today, and they're going to see how that goes, obviously. They're not going to definitively say that he's being activated Saturday. But if things go well in that sim game, then I think there's a pretty good chance we see Springer either Saturday or Sunday.
Man, do they need him. And that would ordinarily be a stupid comment because you're a better team with George Springer on it than without him under almost every circumstance. I think that that's undeniable. But they have been searching for a leadoff hitter. And it's not just that, Ben. They need to lengthen this lineup out, right? So if you can get Springer back, if you can get Teoscar back ASAP, and I understand that there's a bit of a process to go through because he's been sitting around for 10 days in the COVID protocols and he's had to recover from the illness. But if you can get Springer into the lineup, Teoscar into the lineup, all of a sudden, if those two guys are performing, things lengthen out. And that has been lacking from an offensive perspective so far this season.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's clear to see, you know, for those of us like, you know, you and me, Scotty, we're zoned in on these games. You kind of watch these at-bats and you can very clearly sense that, you know, when you're going from Panic to Espinal to Palacios, this is not the lineup that the Blue Jays envisioned running out there. But even when you zoom out a little bit broader and you just look at where the Jays are in terms of runs scored, they're, last I checked, 17th in the major leagues, tied with the Marlins and Rangers, I believe. So it just hasn't been good. And George Springer, he's such a good offensive player. We haven't seen it yet, but of course it's true. He's going to make a huge difference once he's back. And then you start to look at some different configurations within the next couple of days of, hey, is it Springer, Bo, and then Vladdy? Or how do you configure things at the top of that order? And no matter how you do it, once he's in there, it's going to be a better offensive team.
And Vladdy's been great so far. We talk about him every single day. He's hitting .379. He's reached base every game, but it's the defensive side as well. What do you think's the biggest thing to his game where, you know, he's having this start? What's stuck out to you with Vladdy?
Yeah, it's a lot of things, but I think the biggest is just the offensive results and how he's getting there. I mean, the results clearly are what everyone expected, and how he's getting there is with a plate approach that seems sustainable. It's with quality contact that is really impressive. Like, these are not, as all Blue Jays fans know, and they see one 110-mile line drive after another off his bat, he's not lucking his way into this .390 batting average or this 1,000 OPS. He is earning every bit of it and doing it in a way that seems just repeatable. So Vladdy's been incredible. I think it's been, for me, the most interesting thing to watch this season, and I don't think that's going to get old, you know, for the next little bit, at least. So it's been a lot of fun watching Vlad Jr.
I think a couple things, Ben. I mean, he seems to be able to get to that inner half fastball. That's something Kevin Barker's been pointing out a lot and is quite noticeable in games. And the second part of it is, and he's not 100% on this, but nobody is, that eye that was so celebrated when he was a kid. You remember that home run when he walked off the exhibition game in Montreal? I think it was 2018, where... Yeah. I mean, he sent everybody into a frenzy. It was the only run scored in the game, 1-0 win. But there was a slider just off the plate, the pitch before the home run, that was as or more impressive to me as the home run itself. And it seems like that keen eye of his has also returned. And it's got to be a confidence thing.
Absolutely. Because, you know, in these things, I think it's why I kind of struggled to answer what a example particularly stands out, because they really do overlap, where, you know, he has the fitness and then that allows him to get to maybe that inside fastball. And then because he knows he can get to that, he is more comfortable waiting on that slider just off the plate. And he's got the eye to do that. And then once he does hit it, he's in better shape. So it becomes a double and not a single, or a double and not a, you know, single put out at second base. So it's all these things adding up. And then you just see his reaction to it too. And we're not there. And so, you know, you have somewhat limited ability to get a read on it. But at the same time, you see him smiling and joking around in the dugout. It's hard to fake that. Like, it's really hard to, if he wasn't having a good time, I don't think we'd be seeing the kind of reactions and the kind of smiles that we do from Vladdy in the dugout.
I keep hearing the House of Horrors in Tampa Bay, and I've had enough of it.
Yeah,
I don't know.
House of Horrors, Benny. Yeah, Benny.
I'm not saying it's not real. I've seen it in the NHL, but I'm just tired of hearing we can't go down to Tampa and win a series or sweep them. What does this team need to do to get, you know, to lose the House of Horrors, you know, description of going down into Tampa? Because at this point, I just, like, do they not, after what happened in the playoffs last year, do you not just say, okay, let's go down and prove something this year right from the first time, you know, we go into Tampa?
Yeah, just getting over some flashbacks there first after some...
You've seen it. You've seen it, Ben. I've seen it. It's not a lie. It's a house of horrors.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, yeah, I think... well, look, it definitely has not been a good place for the Blue Jays to play. And as you say, the playoffs last year, that was a tough way to end that season for this young team. At the same time, the one thing that might switch it is that this is virtually a home game for them now. Like, a lot of the players are going to stay in their own places, of course, mm-hmm. with St. Petersburg, where the Rays play, and Dunedin, where the Jays play, being, I think, about 40 miles apart. It's a very quick bus drive or drive away. So for these guys, they can really be more comfortable playing in the Trop than they ever would. So maybe if there's ever a time that, you know, they can sleep in their own beds, they can drive their own cars over if they want to, that's maybe going to help them. We'll see.
Was the Trop where Brad Lincoln walked the world? And I can't remember if it was you or Shy down there for Sportsnet at the time, but Gibby in his office after the game, and he can't walk the world. Brad Lincoln, you remember Brad Lincoln walked the world and the Jays lost.
Wow. That must have been Shy, because I don't think I covered
okay.
Brad Lincoln.
Oh, that was classic.
That sounds like 2012. When would that have been?
Probably 13, 14, something like that. Yeah, before it got good in 2015 for sure, because I started in 2013 covering the team.
Right.
So it would have had to have been after that. But that's one of the memories I have of Tropicana Field. I think... You know, to the extent, it's not going to be about the stadium. We're having some fun with that. It's not going to be about the stadium. But, Ben, I'm telling you right now, and I think you know this, like, if this team continually kicks the ball around on the left side of the diamond, and I'm including Lourdes Gurriel in left field when I say left side of the diamond, mm-hmm. Bo has struggled. Cavan has struggled it at third base. Lourdes Gurriel is taking bad routes to fly balls. The other night in Boston, he turned a fly ball out into a double. If these guys give a fundamentally sound team, and a team like Tampa Bay, who typically have excellent at-bats, extra outs in too many innings, doesn't matter how well you hit the baseball or pitch the baseball, you're going to cough one up and maybe more.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way the offense is going, it's not like they're winning these blowout games. So the margins are thin. So you need to support your pitching staff. And, you know, the defensive stuff is interesting, right? Because, you know, Vlad and Bo have not been good. Now, I don't think that dooms them to a future of only not being good. I think that it's also possible that they can improve and that they can play better than they have. And it probably makes sense, in my opinion, to keep giving them chances. But it hasn't been good. That's you know, important to acknowledge. And I think with Lourdes, I mean, it's not as though he gets as many reps. So in a sense, it's less glaring than what you see from the two infielders. But in another way, it's kind of more glaring because it's not just that one misplay. There have been multiple times this year where you kind of look and you're like, couldn't he have caught that ball or taken a better route to cutting one off? Like, it's, there have been multiple times, and with more outfielders coming back, Springer and Teoscar, you wonder, is this a chance to DH Lourdes a bit more?
Well, he's got to start hitting if he's going to DH.
True.
Like, that's a part of it, right? But we assumed, man, with this lineup, Rowdy Tellez and Randall Grichuk are going to be fighting for playoff time at their respective positions. Grichuk's not coming out of the lineup for me. There's been some regression. That's natural. But he's not coming out of the lineup right now. I think it's Tellez and it's Lourdes. And I think it's too hyperbolic to say this with any certainty, Ben, but there's a feeling to me of early 2019 with Gurriel where he wasn't hitting a lick and he was struggling really badly at shortstop, and they sent him down to work on some things, come back as an outfielder. I don't think you go that direction with him at this particular point, but this was a confident and really good left fielder for most of 2019 and all of last year. I have no idea where it's gone. Of anybody on this team right now, this year, 18 games in, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is the most baffling to me.
Yeah, and it's a long list, right? Because, you know, you could add the catchers to that who have only thrown one base runner out of 14, and neither one of them is hitting. You know, I think that certainly Biggio's season is a little baffling, but Lourdes is definitely up there, right? And I think offensively, I just think it has to turn around with him because he has that ability to hit the ball to all fields and make good contact to all fields. And it's just such a rare skill in baseball that I think it drives him forward. But the defensive stuff, and you're right to say that he was pretty good in 2019 and 20, and his throws were good. He was making the plays. He deserves credit for that. But right now it doesn't look great. And of course we're 18 games in, but you know, that's still 10% of the season, and we can't close our eyes to what we've seen in the first stretch of the season either.
Well, and we're sitting there watching games, Ben, and you have no idea what's going to happen on routine ground balls or routine fly balls to the left side of the diamond right now. I mean, the tough plays are the tough plays, but when you see the ball leave the bat in the general direction of the left side of the field, there's a question mark until that play is completed, and that's not a particularly good feeling. And I don't think Charlie Montoyo would ever acknowledge it publicly, but if we're seeing it, he's seeing it too.
And oh, feeling absolutely. No doubt. And I'm sure the pitchers too. So it's, you know, if this team is going to be good, they're going to figure out an answer to this. They're going to have to, because, you know, good teams don't get past the Yankees or the Rays or the White Sox by giving up extra outs. Like, you can't do that to these lineups. So they're going to have to figure out a solution. And for now, it sounds like they're going to take the path of letting these guys have more reps and have more chances. And I think that's reasonable, but I also think it's not carte blanche. It's not, you get to play, let's say in the case of Lourdes Gurriel or Kevin Biggio, you don't just get 162 at this position because we started the year there. It's, you've got to adjust. And if there comes a time that, it, you know, it makes sense to rotate more guys through and figure out a different approach, then I think that's okay.
We'll leave it there, pal. And we'll try to get a chalet sauce that may or may not contain meat so that the vegetarians can enjoy it too. I don't want you excluded from the experience. You should be
amazing.
Able to dip your tofu in chalet sauce. Be big on
it. All right. Well, I look forward to it, guys. Good talking to you as always.
Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll do this again very, very soon. Ben Nicholson-Smith is the baseball editor for Sportsnet.ca, a Blue Jays and MLB insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence. Online and in the showroom, visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. We're looking forward to our conversation with Perdita Felicien coming up later in the 8 o'clock hour. David Amber will be along as well. We'll talk Leafs Jets and the state of the North Division. Single-digit games remain before the playoffs for the Leafs. They got 9 games left. And when you look at the standings, Vancouver's got a lot of games still to play. But the Calgary Flames, who sit 5th right now, Vancouver have a bunch of games in hand, but the Calgary Flames, who sit 5th, would have to win out and the Leafs would have to lose out in regulation just for the Flames to tie the Leafs. That's my long way of saying
they have a chance.
A playoff spot formally being clinched is just around the corner. At David Amber at the top of the hour. I've done this once before, Ziggy, and I want to do it again because my partner is doing some teaching this week at Royal Military College, RMC. And a shout out to the young cadets at RMC who are listening to the show right now. They want us to know they love the show. We love them. And we love our military. We love our soldiers. We love our troops.
Do.
And they're giving a lot. They're giving a lot to their country right now in a different way during this pandemic time. So a shout out to the young cadets at RMC. And you remember the freezing cold arena there.
Oh, yeah. Just absolutely brutal. It's a tight little rink. Always have fans there. The benches, yeah, there's not for the coaching staff. You're right up against the wall. You got to kind of keep your head up and keep an eye on
you. Got
puck.
The toe warmers in your
cold.
Boots when you're coaching
yeah.
there?
I got the insoles that have like the little, they have like warmers. You kind of flip them on from the back. I have the hand warmers, the ones you keep in your ski gloves. I have those in my pockets, and I wear a full winter coat when we're playing there. I don't wear the suit jacket.
So You're not wearing a robe,
and I would wear a toque if I was allowed, but we're not allowed toques on the bench. So
you're not allowed toques on the bench.
No, not allowed. But the winter coats they would let me because there's some cold rinks in the OUA. But yeah, RMC, always a good team, gritty team, play hard all the time. If you don't show up, it's going to be, you know, a long game. So yeah, I miss the games there.
Well, hopefully you'll be back at RMC next year for a road game with U of T, and we get OUA and we'll get university sports across Canada back in the flow. It'd be nice to get back to a little bit of normalcy here. So yeah, we're down to 9 games left, Siggy, and you were pumping your fist.
Mm-hmm.
When I said this, 9 games left in the Leafs regular season. And what I interpreted from you pumping your fist was, all right, let's get this going. Like, let's get down through these 9 games and get to the playoffs. I'm at that.
Because
last night to me felt like the clinch of first place in the division. I could be wrong. I get it. There's enough time left for Winnipeg to catch the Leafs, Edmonton to catch the Leafs. But it felt like the clincher last night with the win.
Yeah, that's a big one, right? Because if not, then you go to it's 2 points instead of 6 right now, and that's massive with under 10 games to go, right? Anytime you can kind of match the points to the amount of games left, you've pretty much pushed them out, right? Mathematically, like with 20 games to go in a season, when you get a 20-point lead on someone, it's pretty tough to come back on them, from my experience from playing. I don't know what the actual numbers of that are and the odds of a team catching another team, but from playing, when a team would match the points of the games, it's usually over. So they're at 6 points now, 9 games. Another win here or there with a Jets loss. And yeah.
If you beat them tomorrow night, right at all.
It's over. Tomorrow's over. If they win tomorrow, it's over. So these are the 4-point games are big, and they've been like that the whole year, right? I feel like that's been something we haven't really talked about a lot, where you're playing, the points you get or don't get are going against the guys you're battling with for a spot. This isn't just like some other division in your conference or the other conference where, you know, they matter if it's in the same conference, but once you cross over into the other, it's, you know, you're trying to pick up those points. Or if you lose those games, it's not a big of a deal because you're not competing with those teams for a playoff spot. And that's something I feel like, a lot of us have overlooked. Every night's a 4-point game, and it's been an interesting year. I've liked the Canadian division. I doubt it will be back if they don't have to, but for the most part, these games with Winnipeg, they've been the most entertaining games of the year. Obviously, everyone wants to watch McDavid and Draisaitl, but the way the Jets play and the Leafs play, great top two lines. They've matched up well, right? It's a heavy, good game of hockey, physical goals. We've seen a little bit of everything. And yeah, nothing's going to change tomorrow.
We'll talk about this with David Amber as well. And I agree with you. I think travel-wise, it's too hard to keep the Canadian division together. And I do think that there's something to be said for variety. I'd like to see them play Vancouver and Calgary and Edmonton more than once at home, once on the road every year.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand that you can't be doing it 8 or 9 or 10 times a year. Is there anything from this year's schedule that we'd like to keep and see going forward? One thing for me, and they actually did this a little bit in the early 2000s, probably around the time, Ziggy, you were breaking into the NHL. You'd go and play a rival division team back-to-back in their barn, or they'd come to you. Like, you'd play a Saturday, Monday in that city. You'd maybe host a team for a couple of consecutive games, or you'd play a home road back-to-back if the travel wasn't,
back-to-back.
Wasn't yep. too bad. Stuff like that. I'd like to see more of that again. I think that, especially if it's a division rival, but also if it's an out-of-division team, that second game, there's something to build off of from the first game, right?
I'm with you.
I like
yeah.
that stuff.
I like the 2 and 3 games. Like, if the Leafs play and however the schedule works out in the coming years, is say they go to Winnipeg and part of the schedule is you play 2 games in each in each city, you're going to go for, I think we've all seen what happened this year, you're going to go for a back-to-back. Like, you're going to play both games there. You're not going to travel to Winnipeg for one, and they're not going to come to Toronto. We're going to, if there's anything of this year that's going to carry over into next, it's the fact that we're going to see teams, when they travel to a city, they're going to play more than a game. Unless it's an hour, hour and a half, maybe not. But even on the East Coast, you know, I think it's worked this year. And I don't know why they didn't do it more before. A variety of teams, you know, maybe the fans don't want to see the same players. But I think that's been one of the benefits this year. And it cuts down on travel, right? Which I like. As a former player, trust me, guys love knocking them out. You rather play a back-to-back. You don't have to go back to a city. Huge for guys.
Well, imagine.
And even more, equipment staff. Training staff.
Yeah, because they're the ones.
They love it. Oh, my gosh.
They're getting there early in the morning before the practice or the morning skate. They're the last ones to leave. They're loading buses,
so you go in and play
planes.
Yeah, you play a back-to-back instead of getting on the plane, flying out there again, and then back home again, unloading the equipment. So it's big on them, too. I would love to see when the season is done, like after all the games are played, like we don't even know the last 9 games. How are they going to be played out? We don't know. COVID could come tomorrow, right? We don't know. I'd love to see at the end of the season, we'll take a look at the hours that were saved this year by playing multiple games in a city in one trip.
Imagine,
I think it would be.
Imagine next year, Leafs and Panthers, 2 nights in a row or 2 out of 3 nights down in Sunrise, and then go across to the other coast and play the Lightning.
Florida, we love Florida.
Play 4 games and spend a week in beautiful weather in January. The 4th game would probably be problematic for the Leafs. Probably had a good week down there by that point, but
SPF 50, you're all good. I've had a couple, yeah.
Get a little golf in on the off day after an off day practice. Never hurt anybody.
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. It would almost be like a 2 there, a 2 in, you know, a 2 in Florida, and then like 2 in Raleigh in Carolina or something like that, where you play, you know, 6 games in a week and a half. You get to knock out the 3 cities, and that's it. I think I like the move from the NHL. Hopefully they move to that next year.
Perdita Felician, former Canadian Olympian and a current Summer Olympics broadcaster, has a new book out called My Mother's Daughter, and she will join us to discuss that a little bit later on in the 8 o'clock hour. Pinball Clemens, the general manager of your Toronto Argonauts, on the state of the CFL, but also celebrating 30 years since Rocket Ismail spurned the NFL, at least initially, and signed a 7-figure contract to play for the Toronto Argonauts. There was huge hype. That was right around the time that McNall, Gretzky, John Candy owned the Argos. There was a lot of celebration around bringing Rocket Ismail north of the border. We'll talk about that with Pinball coming up in just a little bit. Up next, David Amber on the state of the Leafs and on things he'd like to see carry over from this season when we go back to the more understood divisional format in the years ahead post-pandemic. 5, Jets 3, a 14-save third period for Jack Campbell. 14 of his 34 saves coming in the third period last night. Big win for the Leafs in Nick Foligno's debut. He got a helper. He gave up the empty net goal late, passed it to Mitch Marner, and that was his assist. So the Leafs now have a 6-point lead on Winnipeg for top spot in the North Division as they inch closer to formally clinching a playoff spot. The Blue Jays off last night, kick off a 3-game series in Tampa Bay against the Rays tonight. Steven Matz already 3-0. I know wins and losses don't matter for starting pitchers anymore, but he's 3-0 to start the season with a 1.47 ERA. Tough, tough matchup. Tyler Glasnow for the Rays, 0.73 ERA to start the season. That's a 7 o'clock broadcast. First pitch a little after that right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And, of course, you can watch the game on Sportsnet 1. The Raptors are off again tonight. They are back in action tomorrow afternoon, a 1 o'clock tip at Madison Square Garden against the New York Knicks. Pinball Clemens in just a little bit. Here's David Amber from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. You can also hear him contribute to Hockey Central at noon here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good morning, sir. Happy Friday. How are you?
Yes, yes, Scott, Ziggy, yes, pinball, yes.
That was my pinball.
So, if we played that for him, and by if I mean when, if he were to grade that out of 10.
Not good.
What do you think he's giving it?
I liked it. The facial expressions, though, because he lights up a room like no one I've ever met before, right? I mean, you guys know pinball. He's
absolutely
the best. So he would have a big, big smile. I love the guy.
He's probably,
it wasn't very good.
He's probably too nice a guy. You know, it's a 2.5, 3, but he'd give you an 8.5 or a 9 just because he's too nice. He's too nice a guy. Before we get into Leafs and Jets from last night, Ziggy and I were talking just before Helena's traffic update about things we would like to see that have taken place this year, schedule-wise or whatever, carry over into the years ahead. And we were talking about the early 2000s. There was a period of time there, David, where divisional rivals, I think, played 8 times a year, and sometimes you got the Saturday night, Monday night consecutive games in the same city. The Leafs would go up to Ottawa, play the Senators twice, or the Habs would come here and you'd play them back-to-back in Toronto. Whatever it looks like, travel, no travel, I'd like to see more of these back-to-back games against divisional rivals, even Atlantic divisional rivals, going forward.
Yeah, I agree, and I heard Ziggy's point. From a player's perspective, it makes all the sense. Listen, from an environmental standpoint, it makes all the sense. It gets the rivalries stirred up a little bit more. It gives you some storylines you can work on. I think that's a great thing that should and hopefully will carry forward from this year. The idea of keeping these divisions aligned as they are, I might be in the minority here, but I don't like it. What I would like to see happen is I would like to see going back to the traditional 4 divisions that we had last year, but with a caveat, sacrifice a few games here and there, guys, and add on a few of these greater rivalry games. So instead of seeing Edmonton and Toronto twice a year, see Edmonton and Toronto 4 times a year and sacrifice a Toronto versus Columbus, a Toronto versus Carolina, one of the non-traditional Eastern Conference matchups. So you still have the East and the West, and you're only going to play most of those teams twice, like the LA Kings or Anaheim or whatever, but you can kind of cherry pick for each team what are some of the better logistical rivalries that make sense from a historical or geographical standpoint or whatever. Figure it out. The league could figure that one out. And that gives the fans a little bit more of what they love, but you don't have the monotony of, 8 and 9 times versus the same team. And quite frankly, when people say, I hope the Canadian division stays, I say, well, if you're the Vancouver Canucks, do you really want that? They don't play in their time division. In their time zone.
Neither do the Jets.
And neither do the Jets. Now,
yeah,
it's not perfect because we obviously have a skewed, league where you have way more teams in the Eastern time zone than in the let's say the Central or in the Mountain time zone. But for certain teams, it just doesn't make sense, the current alignment. But I'd like to see an increase from the traditional just two games against the other conference. You know, Toronto-Vancouver four times, Toronto-Edmonton, Toronto-Calgary four times would be perfect.
So what, we haven't had you on in a while. What are your thoughts on where the Leafs are at? Trade deadline deals, goaltending, nine games left. What do you think of the team right now?
Well, you asked me today after yesterday. It was things were a little, you know, it's what, up and down. It's day to day on some levels there. But you know what, Ziggy, last night was, I think, a big win for the Leafs, not just to end the losing streak, but to beat the team that's, you know, nipping at their heels for first in the division. And also for Jack Campbell, I mean, you heard after Tuesday's loss, granted it was David Rittich and that, but you heard Sheldon Keefe say, I'm concerned about our goaltending, which is one of the most, you know, candid statements we've heard from him post-game, you know, as his tenure as Maple Leafs head coach. Last night wasn't about the number of saves Jack Campbell made, but it's when he made them, which is what we always said about Grant Fuhr. He'd let in four goals, but when the game was on the line, he made the big saves. And that's what we saw from Jack Campbell last night. Protecting a one-goal lead in the third period, and he did what you need your goalie to do. So I still have question marks because I am, you know, this whole injury to Freddie Anderson is so shrouded in mystery, right? Like, we just don't know the extent of it and if he's a day away, a week away, or what. So that's a bit of a concern. But sort of hitting the reset button for Jack Campbell, getting back to a win and playing the way he's shown in the past this season that he can play, I think was really important. I love the makeup of the Leafs team. And one thing I'll say, and you saw the absolute elation there at the empty net goal and Foligno getting his first point and how excited Marner was to give him the puck. And they seem to have such incredible chemistry. And Ziggy, you've been on teams. I mean, I think that really is important. When we talked to the guys in studio about the teams, the best teams they were on, it wasn't just the winning, but it was just there was a certain energy with the guys and support for one another. And it does feel that this Leafs team has that energy, that synergy, that, you know, love for one another. And I'm not saying that's going to carry them to a Stanley Cup championship because they're singing Kumbaya after the game. But I do think there is some importance there. So I really think Kyle Dubas and the Leafs management deserve some credit for putting together a team. They've assembled a team with the parts, at least on paper, that looks like it really can make a deep run into the postseason.
And yeah, and I'm with you on that. I think it is a different team than last year, last couple years. I don't know if that's Thornton coming in and Simmons and Spezza has been here for a couple years. You got that, you know, that veteran presence. But when you see a situation like Nylander a couple days ago, late for a meeting, we don't know much about it, but apparently the leadership group got together. And it was like, no, we got guys out of the lineup right now. Let's we need this player in our lineup, which I don't think would have happened a year ago. And you know, I don't know what you think about the whole Nylander situation and the fact the leadership group did step up, but that was one of those situations that just happened recently where I don't see it happening in other years.
Yeah, and I think you have enough of that. It's taken some of the burden or a lot of the burden off John Tavares to have to be that guy. John Tavares, I think, in his perfect role, goes out there and plays hard, and that's how he leads. He leads by example. He's not a, by all accounts, he's a cerebral guy. He's not a big rah-rah guy, and he doesn't need to be. When you have voices like Joel Thornton and Jason Spezza and Wayne Simmonds, and now you have Foligno, I mean, we did a stat or a graphic last week after the trade deadline, and the Leafs have now 12 players currently on their roster who have worn either a C or an A in their NHL career. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, they have all sorts of leadership. They don't have to worry about that. So, yeah, they can make a decision like that. They knew Hyman was out. They knew Mikheyev was out. Why punish the team when they want to get back to a winning way? And Nylander has such great chemistry right now with John Tavares. He's been playing some of his best hockey. So why punish the team? There's ways to make guys accountable. We had guys on our panel say, you know, Nylander's going to go out there and play guilty. He knows he messed up, and so he'll play his best game. And he went out there, even though the Leafs lost that game, he went out there and he looked pretty good. So I think you're right. I think that's an important ingredient to this Leafs team moving forward.
David, we'll leave it there. Pinball has called and is on the line. So we promise we'll be nice to
and,
you.
And happy birthday, belated birthday.
Yes, happy yesterday. Belated birthday.
yes, Donna, thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
David Amber, the birthday boy. Is he at a point where we're not talking about how old he is anymore? I don't know when that age is. I feel like you and I have kind of hit it.
He doesn't look a day over 58. What do you mean?
A day? Oh.
60.
Oh.
60.
You waited gone, for him to
he's
hang
gone, right?
up.
How he's gone, right?
You
he's
gone, waited right? for him to hang up.
I don't,
now do pinball. Pinball doesn't look a day over what? Be careful no, now. Be careful now. He's listening.
I love pinball. We first met 2009 was our first time at pinball.
Here he is.
Awesome guy.
Here he is, a former Toronto Argonaut running back. He is now the Toronto Argonauts general manager in between. He's a Grey Cup winning coach. Mike Pinball Clemens is here. Are you still rocking the beard?
Scotty Mac, Ziggy, so good to hear your voice this morning. And yes, I am. I'm not a facial hair guy, but my bride loves it.
She does. All right. Now
I'm stuck.
Okay. So we've peeled the onion back with David Amber a little bit this morning. Now we got to do the same with you. And I'm putting you on the spot, which, you know, you can.
Can I say a belated happy birthday to DA?
Yes, you can.
All right. Excellent. Please go ahead.
Hang on.
But this is what happened about 12 minutes ago when we said, David, welcome to the program.
Yes, yes, Scott, Ziggy, yes, Pinball, yes.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Out of 10.
Well done.
Out of 10.
Well executed.
David Amber, out of 10, what do you give him?
Oh, 11. 11. Yeah, that was well done. Yes.
Yes. He's got the pinball imitation lockdown. It sounded better there than it did initially. So I don't know. All of a sudden, I feel better about playing that. So now, but I'm not distracted any further. Putting you on the spot. The facial hair is white. The hair is dark. Is that au naturel, or are you like me and cheating a little bit now?
Right, cheating just a little bit, and I say that earnestly because my hair really is mostly black on top, and my mustache is mostly black, and my beard is all gray, and so it's actually naturally like that, but it is assisted a little bit. There is a little bit of assistance, but my head is mostly black and my beard's all white.
It's a good look. It's a good look, the mature look. So we're obviously bringing you on for a variety of different reasons, and we'll talk about the anniversary of Rocket Ismael, 30 years since he came to Canada, came to Toronto. That was a huge, huge story at the time, and you were a player on that Argos team that was owned by Gretzky, Candy, and McNall. But we'd be remiss, Pinball, if we didn't ask you about the state of the CFL right now. Commissioner Randy Ambrosi announcing earlier this week that there will be a delay to the start of the 2021 season. August 5th seems to be the earliest date to kick things off for a 14-game season. The Grey Cup would be contested December the 12th in Hamilton, so about 3 weeks later than usual. Fingers crossed that this all gets going. And this also plays with the XFL and the conversations with that league serving as a backdrop. Feels like it's a real pivotal time for the CFL right now.
And I think the most pivotal thing we heard this week, Scotty, is that we will play a season this year, right? So it may be modified 14. It could even be, the modification. If something happens crazy again with this pandemic, right, we could have less control. But the idea here is we're going to play a season. And I think that was the most important information. The talk about the XFL and those kind of things, for me, I don't focus on that. That's that reality. My reality is I've got to field a football team. And the last time we were out, we didn't have the record that we wanted. So that is part of the reason I came back. And so we really do feel that the roster we have today is one of the better rosters in the league. We've done a lot of work there, but it means nothing on paper. And so for me, I'm sold out in getting back on that field and actually seeing this roster work, because, you know, it's great to have it's better to have a good roster on paper than a bad roster on paper, but it means about the same thing, almost nothing.
As a former player, coach, management, you know, you're always like the player's coach, I heard, and the guy any of the players could go up to. What's the feeling around the guys on the team and players in the league? Like, this has to be tough, sitting out a year, now another year in jeopardy. What's it like for these guys, and do you talk to any of them, reach out to see, you know, what their thoughts are on, you know, going to a bubble or starting the season on the road for a couple of games? What's this like for players?
Over communicating, I think, is the real key here in this situation. As much as possible, we've had our coaches reach out to their guys. I've spoken to guys, and so we even have our other personnel, whether it be equipment managers, and so we try to over communicate during this time because it's such a difficult time. We be careful though not to in many ways for players, it's been the most difficult because they only get paid when they play. Now there's been some substitutes. Things like in other businesses that has been there that has helped them through this time, but we while that part is difficult, these guys are professional athletes because they're resilient. When you get to this level, it is a shoulders up game. There are a lot of players that are more talented that never make it to this level because they can't play the shoulders up game. And so these guys are strong, resilient. They try not to complain. Certainly uncertainty, you know, over this year and a bit enters in their mind from time to time. But we be careful, very careful, not to overrepresent ourselves in that manner because of the frontline workers, because of the people who have, you know, health issues and even lost their lives and all the different things that are going on, lost businesses. So in this case, the idea here is, yes, over-communicate, reach out to your guys as much as possible, huddle up as much as you can. There are a few restrictions in terms of players association, you know, making sure that they have that first beeline, that they have that first point of communication. But we also try to help to foster that as well. And so that's really important in what we do.
With Pinball Clemens on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How far along are you guys in your plan to ensure that guys, especially the non-Canadians, American players, can get up here, do the proper quarantine, et cetera, Pinball? I mean, nobody's leaving this to the last minute, and we know that August is further away than the normal June start. But I would imagine that you guys, that's a big part of your focus right now, is just ensuring that everybody gets up here safely and is able to go through the necessary protocols.
You know, there's a wonderful lady on the MLSC staff named Jennifer Sullivan, and I just like to say her name out loud. She's done such a great job with all of the MLSC teams in working through protocols and helping us to understand the urgency, working with provincial officials, and provincial officials have been awesome as well. We were, so as a part of that, you know, we do have someone who specializes, and certainly she has a team who works with her. So big high fives to that team. Matt Black is one of the guys on the football side who is working towards, and Matt understands all of the for the most part, he's the best guy on our side that understands all the platforms along with our therapist. And so that has been happening now for a significant amount of time, knowing and understanding. And there are things that have to be submitted as well to the province, and so that part of it is I don't know as much as I hopefully I will after this after the draft. I'll get into that and understanding that a little bit more. But we're in really good shape because we have a couple of really strong professionals that have led that part of it.
Pinball Clemens is the general manager of the Argonauts, and he's with us on leadoff. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Something to Chew On, brought to us by Great Canadian Meat. So many things seem to happen now, Pinball, I guess it's age, where I go, are you kidding me? That was 20 years ago. That was 30 years ago. Rocket Ismail, 30 years ago this week. And you think about it today, like Trevor Lawrence coming to Canada instead of playing for the Jacksonville Jaguars, who presumably will draft him. That's what happened 30 years ago this week. Rocket Ismail was expected to go first overall to the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL draft. Seven figures. The new ownership group made a splash. Wayne Gretzky, John Candy, Bruce McNall brought Rocket Ismail north to Toronto. Where were you? Because you were playing for the team at the time. Where were you when you heard the news? And did you have any inkling it was coming?
When I heard the news, it was before everybody else. So I did have an inkling before everybody else did. But up until the point I met him, I had no idea. It was the night before, or a couple of nights before, where we were invited to a dinner with John Candy and Bruce McNall. I like, okay, this is pretty cool. and then Rocket and Matt Dunnigan appear, right? And I think Darryl K. Smith was probably there, and it might have been one other person, but we had this little dinner, and I can't remember the restaurant, but it was so overwhelming. So full of life. I mean, you talk about my energy. This guy, like, he makes me look sleepy. And you know, especially at that time, at that age, you know, he was, you know, 21 years old, and everything he did was fast. Not only did he run fast, but everything he did was fast. It was. You know, it was otherworldly. I was the reigning MVP of the team, and they were concerned that I was going to, you know, kind of have a little rivalry there, or I was concerned because I made less than six figures as the MVP, and he was making $4.5 million. But none of that stuff matters, right? When in the team concept, in the team construct of things, these are people and people and relationships, and in accordance with that, he was so infectious. He embraced everybody. Yes, he was young, and you know, there were, you know, some things, you know, that he needed to work through, but he always had this tremendous heart. He always had this fervent desire to be the very best at what he did, and it really was one of those fairy tale times. It's all, when you look back on it, right? It's almost like watching a movie rather than you actually being a part of the story. It's like watching the movie, and all of the parts, including the home opener when the Blues Brothers sang and 40,000 people in the stands, and then you move later to the Eastern Final, where the building was pretty well sold out, and then the Grey Cup when he had the kickoff return touchdown, and the beer came out of the stands and it burst right behind his feet, and so it was just a magical time, guys. Sorry for being so long in this answer, but it's like watching a movie when I think back on the time.
Yeah, and that beer when that can opened and shattered, that beer froze on the spot. We can't forget Matt Dunnigan. I mean, he was injured, right? Like, he was seriously hurt. He had the shoulder thing going on at that point in that Grey Cup game, right?
He sure did, and he was such a battler. I think I'm comfortable in saying that I've played with better quarterbacks. Not very much. I mean, Flutie was for me the best guy that I've ever played with, but Dunnigan for me was the best leader.
That's a great way to leave it. pinball. Mm-hmm. We'll say goodbye by running David Amber's greeting from a half an hour ago one more time.
Yes, Scott, Ziggy, yes, pinball, yes.
I mean, if I listen closely enough, I could almost be fooled. I could almost be fooled by David Amber's impersonation of you.
That's quality.
It's good.
I have to take my hat off on that one, and maybe I can send him off a little additional birthday wish today. And but that was well executed.
Well, if he tells you how old he is, you make sure you tweet that out. I mean, we want that guy. Okay. You get him back. You get him back. Listen, it's always wonderful to hear your voice. Thanks for the trip down memory lane and your insight into what's going on current day CFL, just with the plans for the coming season. You know, we'll have you back on ASAP. We always enjoy it.
Thank you so very much, gentlemen. Have a great weekend, okay? Yeah. Miss you guys.
You bet. Pinball Clemens, the general manager of the Toronto Argonauts. Hands down, one of the most popular athletes, former athletes in this city.
We got to get Argonauts jerseys. That's got to be next on the list.
Look at you. I mean, you've got a Randall Grichuk.
Coming. I don't know about Dolis yet. I got to think about that one.
You're thinking about Dolis.
Thinking about Dolis. He's got to show me a little bit more.
You want a pinball Clemens or you want a current Argos jersey? I mean, jeez.
I'll go pinball Clemens, Argonauts.
Little 31. Number 31.
Oh, yeah.
Number 31. Perdita Felicien, a 2004 Olympian, a 2003 world champion in hurdles, a current Summer Olympics broadcaster, and a new author. Her book is called My Mother's Daughter. We'll speak to Perdita next. It's been a great week on the program, celebrating amateur athletics from Kurt Harnett to Adam VanCouverden, who has gone from Olympic athlete to member of parliament. Hal Johnson was on with us earlier this week, and we continue that today, and we are excited for this conversation. This looks like a wonderful book. It is called My Mother's Daughter. Its author is Perdita Felicien, a 2003 world champion in hurdles, a 2004 Olympian, and someone who will have a significant role on the broadcasting side of the upcoming Summer Olympic Games in Tokyo. And we are pleased to welcome Perdita to the program right now. Good morning, Perdita. How are you?
I'm well, Scott and Mike. How are you?
We're excellent, and we've been looking forward to this. People have stories. There's a long way to go from, and this is going to be an oversimplification, from being born to getting to where you get to, representing Canada at the 2004 Olympics the way that you did. And your story is a very unique one and is a very special one as it relates to your mother, hence the title of your book, My Mother's Daughter. If you could encapsulate for us your mom's experience getting to Canada and the encouragement that she gave you as you pursued your dreams, give it a go. We're looking forward to hearing this.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, we've talked before. I've been interviewed, over a decade by, hundreds of the world's press, including, Canadian press. And I've never discussed this story at all. I've never discussed this story, one, because I didn't know all of it. And two, there are elements of my story that I always thought, made me feel a little bit of, not a little bit ashamed, like just ashamed. So, essentially, the story is really, I take you back in time. I take you back to my mother's immigration story to Canada, which is pretty incredible. So I'm not born. I'm not even a thought. She's a teenager who's had to drop out of school by the time she's around 11 or 12. She has to drop out of school on her little tiny island of St. Lucia because she just has to help her family make a living. So she's been doing that for a few years, and she's a teen mom. She has a little daughter at home who's about one. That's my older sister. And one day she's selling on the beach because that's her job, right? She sells to, rich vacationers, most of them white, affluent, who come to her beach, her local beach to vacation. One day she's around 17, 18 years old, and she's been selling for years. But she sees a man who's from Oshawa, Ontario. She has no clue at the time, of course. And she trespasses because she sees him on the pool, on the pool deck. So she trespasses because she notices that he's cradling a three-month-old baby. And she knows the baby's 3 months old because she has a one-year-old at home. So she asks the man if he needs a babysitter. And he kind of is a little confused, like, oh, okay. But him and his wife agree to have her babysit. And she, that was the very first day of their vacation in St. Lucia. She babysat for the entire 2 weeks for them. That created the friendship that brought her to Canada within 2 years. She had to leave her children behind. By then, when she met the man, actually, she was pregnant with her second child as a teen. She leaves her children behind and comes to Oshawa, Ontario. And that really starts her adventures because she wants to make a better life. She's here working and making things happen. She gets pregnant with me. I'm not planned. My mom really has to make a decision on whether or not she's going to keep me. And Scott, and Mike, that was really the part of the story that was really hard for me to face and to write, because I had to go back to my mom making this decision. And it's a woman's right to make that decision, right? It's her body. So when my mom does decide to keep me for various reasons, her life just becomes more difficult, more tumultuous. And this trajectory that she was hoping to have in Canada is not the case. And so before I ever jumped any hurdles, literally, my mother and I had to overcome homelessness. We had to overcome racism, poverty. You know, my dad abandons her and we have nothing. So the story is really taking you back to our evolution as a family and as a mother and daughter duo, and how we really, you know, go from struggles to, you know, to triumphs.
With Perdita Felicien, as you look back on your childhood and some of those significant challenges, the racism, the abandonment, the periodic homelessness, Perdita, how would you say that those challenges have shaped you?
Yeah. So there was a point in my life where my mother, she was a domestic worker, right? She was a live-in nanny. And so we went where the jobs were. There was a point where my mother didn't have any, she couldn't afford my babysitter. So the irony was she was leaving me with a babysitter to go take care of somebody else's family. And the money just was not adding up. And so my mother had to leave me alone by the time I was age 5 and 6. Which, could you imagine leaving your five, having to make that decision, how petrifying and heart-wrenching that is for a parent. So to answer your question in this way, from a very early age, I've had to be independent. From a very early age, I've seen my mother cry, and I've seen her really have nobody to lean on but me. And I had really a good sense that my mother's life was hard. And my thing was, oh, I'm not going to be on her list. I cannot be on my mom's list. So really the impact that had on me was it made me gritty. Not that I think anyone has to go through anything hard to be gritty, but it made me gritty. And it also made me want to make her troubles and her triumphs, her trials rather, mean something. And so when I was a kid, I had my, you know, my good manners, then I had my good grades, but then I discovered racing in Pickering, Ontario. And then I had my good races to make her proud. And that was really how it informed me. I'm going to make everything my mom went through mean something. And honestly, I'll say this now, because I'm 40 and I think it gives me great perspective to look back on my life in a way. In a way, my successes are sticking it to every single person, including my bio dad, who I do not know, and saying, F you, man. Like, we did it. We made it without you. So screw that, right? And so I can say that without, you know, feeling like, you know, oh, I give you the PC answer. That's the answer. It's to prove something.
Everything that you've gone through personally, on the track, do any other athletes reach out to you to, you know, ask for your advice on how to, you know, work through things and see things in a different way, or, you know, whether it's personal or as an amateur track athlete or professional?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, you know, I've been a broadcaster. I retired in 2013. And I think a lot of people will remember, if you're old enough, like where you were when I fell in 2004 in Athens, right? And I've had people messaging me who have just read the book and said, wow, you've taken me to that. And I remember where I was. But the thing that it's given me is when I'm in a mix zone or when I'm interviewing an athlete or talking to them, they understand that I've been there, right? The highest high, I've tasted it. The lowest low, I've tasted it. And with this year, this pandemic year being what it is, I've had a lot of Olympians reach out to me just to say, hey, like, what's going on? Or I've just reached out to them, right? Like, I'll see them on Instagram or I'll see them on Twitter. I'll realize that they seem frustrated. And I'll just send them an encouraging message, because this is really an unprecedented time in human history. You know, the Olympics are every 4 years, and sometimes I get jealous of NHL players. I'm like, you get to go for the Stanley Cup every year, dude. Like, come on, come on. Right? Imagine waiting 4 years plus one, right? The landscape changes so much. And look, we don't know what Tokyo is going to be like. I mean, I guess we can guess, but it's going to be like nothing any of us have ever seen before. And I think it's still very unpredictable. Countries will drop out. Athletes will drop out. And here's the thing. I'm going to be part of the hosting crew and have a show called Tokyo Today, 12 to 6 every day. Got to plug that. But here's the thing. Like, we don't even really know if all of that is going to happen, right? Because of just the way things are going around the world. Who's to say?
Perdita Feliciana is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It occurs to me, Perdita, and, you know, there would have been some point in your childhood or your adolescence where you just, you knew you were a formidable athlete, where there was a chance to make something more out of this than just being a really good high school track and field participant. Yeah. But I would also imagine, A, because you're human, and B, because of your lived experience that you're now sharing with us, that there would have been periods of time where you doubted it or questioned it. So what's your message? Because it's a human experience to doubt, to wonder, to question the self. What would be your message to people when they go through those periods of times in their lives?
Yeah, this is the thing I speak about a lot, is the fact that, you know, I've had my own personal experience. The big one that everyone knows is Athens, but we've all gone through our own, you know, experience of that. It might not be publicly. If anything, I feel like the year 2020 has brought us all to our knees in some form or fashion, right? It's, you know, having to homeschool your kids, but you still got to work, you know, your husband or your wife or your partner, whoever, they're frustrating you, right? These are all the things that we've had to really experience this year. And so what I always come back to is this, and this is a lesson I've only learned in I'd say recent months, is we're all juggling multiple balls, right? And, you know, there's our families, our work, our children, our passions, ourselves. And I used to never want to ever drop a ball. And I've dropped a really big one publicly, right? I've never, ever wanted to drop balls. And sometimes we feel guilty about it. But here's what I would say to anyone who's struggling with that is, let the balls drop. Drop a ball. You're human. It's totally okay. Like, forgive yourself. But here's what I will say to that. Just make sure the balls that you do drop are the rubber balls, because those bounce back. The glass ones, your health, you know, maybe, you know, the wellness of yourself. Those ones, if they're glass, they're probably going to shatter, and they're harder to put back together. And so my big lesson that I've learned through my sport experience is forgive myself, because I had to forgive myself, you know, for all the mistakes that I've made on the track, right? And those are really public lived experiences. Like, there's newspaper headlines of my face, you know, in anguish and agony, right? And they'll live there forever. But I have to realize, you know what? You made a really, really big mistake, and that's okay. You're human. And I think that's the biggest lesson I've gotten from my sport career, and I'm tasting and feeling that again in the face of COVID.
Do you ever get back on the track at all and train or work with any of the youth or young stars? Because I used to train at York University on the track with Desi Williams, and I'm not sure if you trained there. Did you train there as well any of the years?
I did for a while. I trained in Illinois for a really long time, but whenever I'd come home, I'd train at York U.
And I think, you were there. Like, they wouldn't let me. I was training there with Mike Camilleri, another NHLer, and they wouldn't let us near any of the real athletes in all you guys training. But I was always wondering if you get back out there or not, because I remember what we always watch from a distance, and it was always awesome to see what, you know, what the real athletes look like.
Listen, I remember my very last race was August 2012 at U of T, Varsity Stadium downtown on Bloor. That was my very last race I've ever ran in my life. Wow. I have not touched a hurdle since then. Okay, maybe I'm lying, but I've not jumped a hurdle. Let's say that since then. I don't care. I'm not interested. It's not my problem. Like, I'm done. That's my answer.
Perdita, the book is called My Mother's Daughter, and we're all looking forward to getting our hands on it and giving it a read. We are insistent that we'll be seeing you on Tokyo Today. The Olympics are going to happen this summer. We're thinking positively, putting it out there into the universe. This is a wonderful book. You have a wonderful story, full of challenges, full of triumphs. We thank you for sharing it. today, and we look forward to having you back on the program very soon.
Thanks, guys. I'll see you soon. Talk to you soon.
Perdita Felician, 2004 Olympian, 2003 world champion in hurdles. The book again, My Mother's Daughter. Good, good stuff. And she's real about it, man. Like, it, you know, it's not, it's a long time ago now, Athens and all that, but she's able to talk about it. That was a tough race for her, that first hurdle being knocked down. But when you put that into perspective with what she went through as a child and what she and her mother had to overcome, I think it's just part of the story.
Just getting there. I mean, I know the whole thing and not, you know, obviously not the race she wanted, but just, I mean, getting there and like you said, everything she's been through, it's an incredible story. And I'm sure lots of people reach out to her, lots of athletes. When you have those experiences, it can help anybody out, whatever you're kind of going through. And we know athletes go through a lot that a lot of people don't hear about. So when you can come out and talk about it, I think that's important.
Ziggy guest robes this morning for Gord Stellick, Ben Nicholson-Smith, David Amber, Pinball Clemens, and Perdita Felician. We got to give out guest robes. We got to come up with something now. I mean, you walked on to FaceTime morning with a t-shirt on and a robe. I'm like, geez, man, geez.
Casual Fridays. We need a segment now, Casual Fridays. We just got to figure something to do now. What's Casual Fridays going to be? We'll think about it this
weekend. Certainly
not
business casual, what you got on right now. Casual might actually be too formal for what you're rocking this morning. Listen, the weather is finally going to turn away from the winter that we've had this past week. So enjoy a beautiful warm weekend here in the GTA. We will be back with you on Monday morning at 6 o'clock. Good show is next.
Yes, yes, Scott, Ziggy, yes, Pinball, yes.